Good afternoon. Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a Thursday, the 16th of July, 2026. Just to remind you, we are from 2026 moving forward. As soon as we got into 2026, let us keep on reminding each other that we are more closer to 2050 than we are to 2000. So.
Why would you start with that?
Time, you know, time flies, man. Time flies. I mean, let's talk about, nursing. Now, we don't have the qualifications to talk about the medical aspect of things. We can just, have now, that, which is why we're having that, that discussion from a point of view coming out of the public sector, of course. That's from the Standing Committee of Education, Youth, Civic Relations, and Community Development. That's a mouthful.
No, Helmut, let's still continue. I'm going to get into my persona, because just so our listeners know, guys, today, in Afrikaans, we say there's a word that said, a loosing. Now, that means it's a beating so severe, ne? Mm-hmm. That you actually feel sorry for the person getting the beating, even though there's potentially a justification for the beating. But I'm not beating anyone. No violence. We don't advocate for violence here on Eagle FM.
Yeah.
Please, guys, this is metaphorically.
You know, when I was going through all the materials of today's home run, the first thing that came in my head was the Afrikaans word "dier mekaar," and the first time I heard it.
And Helmut, this is past "dier mekaar." It's a good thing you identify "dier mekaar." This is past "dier mekaar."
"Dier mekaar." So, you know, in 2015, just the beginning of 2015, I was in instrumentation mechanics class with a bunch of classmates, and we're doing practicals. Mm-hmm. So, more like a model of a circuit board.
Mm.
Yeah, you have to wire it in a specific way, and then your teacher or your trainer will come and look at whether everything is fine.
Yeah.
Now, there are specific ways that you have to bend the wire to make sure that your circuit is as clean as possible.
Yeah.
Now, one of my classmates just wired that thing like, spaghetti looks better on a plate. But the thing is, it worked perfectly. It's just the wiring that looked even very spaghetti-ish.
So it's quality of work that he was also going to be assessed on.
Yeah. So the trainer comes to his board, tests all the switches, all the bulbs, everything is working perfectly. And then he turns and looks at my friend and classmate and is like, okay, so everything is working perfectly.
Yeah.
But should I tell you what I think is the only problem with your second? Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, sir. Like, so you do know what's wrong with your second. And I was like, yes, sir. So what's wrong with it? The only word he said was, it's "dier mekaar."
let me assume this next part, Helmut. The trainer was an Afrikaans guy, ne?
Yeah.
That's why he used him. So you guys got exposed to "dier mekaar" before you got exposed to Afrikaans?
Absolutely.
I can imagine that conversation. Do you know what this is?
Yes, sir.
"Dier mekaar," ne?
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, everything worked perfectly.
Yeah.
Now the reason why I agree with you when you say that today's discussion in terms of let's just lay the foundation first of today's discussion. A few days ago, that standing committee with a very long name, that's a standing committee of education, youth, civic relations, and community development. They just started these engagements, right?
Yeah. So this started at the start of July, just so that people know. And actually, Helmut, it was like a 2-day thing, like a Friday, because I went on a Friday.
Yeah.
I recorded, that recording that you listened to was on a Friday. The next one was to meet with student unions
mm-hmm.
on the Saturday. Now, obviously, what I've assessed specifically of student unions mm-hmm. is that the discussion becomes an entitlement discussion. It doesn't become like this, let's try and find
the, you know, what potentially is a pathway to identify things from here.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reason why I didn't go to the Saturday session. But what you probably also heard in this audio was that it seemed like within the first two and a half presentations already at the start of the discussion, the discussion is closed. Because it answers itself.
Now, because just from the first, by the time that you get to the third presentation, you have already had at least some conflicting regulatory issues being pointed out by both representatives of just the first two or three nursing tertiary institutions.
No, but it's conflicting to the MPs. Not conflicting to them. Because them as the
private... Actually, it's confusing for them because you have this whole... I mean, which is... Now, that's why... which is why I pointed out that I totally agree with your point of view of this is on the... this is way past Dier Mekaar Avenue.
this is something else.
Yeah, because... look, my friend's circuit that I described earlier, his circuit worked. It's just that the layout is had a little bit of a mix-up. So... there was not a lot of confusion on the side of the, you know, of the trainer as to what is wrong with it because it was that obvious and it wasn't about the functionality.
Functionality
was a check.
Yeah. What is
it's
going
the
on?
The layout.
What's up with your internals?
Now, this, now, the Dier Mekaar in this regulatory, you know, regulatory issue, especially in relations to the discussions that was had, with mostly, if I, from, you know, from the audio, mostly a private institution, you know, healthcare, private healthcare institutions.
Training.
Yeah, training.
Yeah, if you say healthcare, then it's, they are actually giving health.
So they're just training the health caregivers.
Private health training facilities.
All right. Now, they seem to be, because they are, you know, there are different institutions involved in the approval of, you know, accrediting, you know, approving and accrediting new institutions.
And their courses.
You have and their facilities.
And their courses. Helmut? Because you will have, let's say, the business registration, like a BIPA situation, which is obviously also BIPA. Then you've got the facility that needs accreditation and the course. I didn't know. I thought the accreditation is just you in name and everything you are doing.
I know, right? Because the first thing that you can think of when you talk about accreditation is NQA. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
and
that's
possibly NTA.
The, you know, is the one that pops up more often.
Yeah.
And then followed by NTA.
Yeah.
By the time that you get, you know, you realize that, there are actually multiple institutions. No, you're not just talking about NTA and NQA because, NTA is, you know, this is your national training authority. So if you are going for things that are more hands-on, you can't go, you know, you can, you know, you will have to go through them.
But you also have to align with NQA.
Yeah, there you go.
Now here's what NQA does. NQA can give you an accreditation for you, the facility, and not your course. You're laughing, Albert.
I took this I took this note from the doctor Dr. Johannes I didn't get the last name and I don't want to butcher it. Now the good doctor explained the sort of like some of the issues that health training institutions basically run into when it comes to, especially from their, you know, early stage stages as they are trying to get all these legal documents for them to operate, is that to be now as a new institution to be accredited, an institution must have a facility, lectures, and students enrolled. And but at the same time, the very same you know institutions that are doing these accreditations and approvals are warning students, which is reasonable enough, not to enroll with the institutions that are not accredited and not not approved. But as part of their approval and accreditation you know requirements, the institution they are accrediting must have all the three. Facility,
already.
Curriculum, students, lecturers,
all three. And I shared, just for the listeners to know this, I shared with Helmut a public notice that the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, MESAC, had released at the start of this month regarding, it's like the headline of this notice reads, accreditation and, let me close this document, accreditation and unregistered institutions the notice basically says the public has to inform the Ministry of Education about unregistered and unaccredited institutions accepting and enrolling students.
Yeah.
However, this is a discussion about the health sector where, like Helmut just now explained, there is a conflicting scenario of messaging from the public sector operatives being Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education. We need to train our own medical specialists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can't concentrate everything in Windhoek, which has been the biggest discussion that I have cited, or we have cited, Helmut and I, here on Eagle FM. We can't be centralized. Things need to cascade out of Windhoek.
Yeah.
Now, that doctor, did you hear his frustration at the questioning, at the questions and answer session after his presentation?
Yeah.
Did you hear his frustration, Helmut? Mm-hmm. Where the one MP asked him about accreditation, and then he asked, what must I do if the person who has to come and accredit me is sitting in Windhoek? And he's most based in Oshakati.
Yeah.
Is it Oshakati or is it Ongwediva?
Must be one of the two.
Yeah. And he says, I'm based over there. And this person has to travel from Windhoek to go and open up there. Assist the standing committee.
So that's the, that's an interesting one because, it keeps bringing us back to, it doesn't matter which organization we have, which discussion we have in terms of, either service provision or basically mostly service provision.
Yeah.
Especially in the public sector. If it's something that involves the public sector, the discussion of centralization always pops up. I mean, it popped up with the, micro-lending, exactly.
Yeah, with NAMFISA.
The same thing.
NAMFISA was asked one question. Do you have offices across the country to deal with, because how do they identify that the major symptom is that much of...
It happens more.
Outside Windhoek.
Yeah.
The exploitation is the greatest outside of Windhoek. And when they were asked, so NAMFISA, how are you going to address this issue? Do you have offices across the country? No, we do not. Oh, so you're only Windhoek based, but you're representing Namibia.
Air conditions, buddy. Air conditions.
I know air conditions. I know, Helmut. But that's the concern. That's the exact point that we've been driving home here on Eagle FM, on the home run, is that we can have the lovely NDP 6 and Harambe Prosperity Plan 2 and NDP 5 and Harambe Prosperity Plan 1. You can go back in history, ne? Namibia's biggest hurdle is because we are too centralized with our particular initiatives.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I bring it to this discussion. So that was the micro-lending was Mr. Sister Standing Committee of the Standing Committee.
Yeah.
Hamid, you were still going to make a point with your introduction first before I go into my bad cop note. And I can't hold back anymore.
Just to wrap up my point, my point was, it doesn't matter what discussion we have.
Yeah.
Especially when the public sector is involved.
Yeah.
Decentralization is going to be, will almost always be part of that hurdle that we are trying to navigate. And, As soon as that popped in my head, I started thinking of, now that you brought up NDP6, if we are going to carry on with this whole centralized way of doing things, we may as well just change NDP6 to
Windhoek Development Plan.
Exactly.
Yeah, or Commerce Development Plan, because it's definitely not national.
Definitely not.
It's definitely not national.
Because all the discussions keeps coming to...
Centralization.
Yeah, to centralization. But one thing that I basically found fascinating was the regulatory authorities and how they seem to be giving mixed messages to, you know, to this to those that will want to participate into educating Namibians in the health you know, in the health discipline.
So
one thing that when I was listening to the doctor about how confusing this the requirements that they have to follow are, and the, basically some clarifications must be done so that a very clear message is sent. You know, as the first thing that popped in my head, working in silos.
Definitely.
You're telling me they had no idea this whole time, then?
Definitely. But here's the thing: we even have to share with the listeners. So dear listeners, This standing committee's engagement, like many standing committees, they have to start from a motion that was submitted in the National Assembly in last year. Now, this was a motion, Helmut, that was submitted, it's not in this document. There's another document that has the whole thing with all the motions and the argument, debate, discussion. I'll send that a little bit, but yeah. This brief comes through from the standing committee, meaning, it's moved from the motion to the standing committee level, where the standing committee obviously is now engaging with these training facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So the motion reads, dear listeners, this is the hypothesis of the motion. Motion on uncontrolled proliferation of nursing schools and health training centers in Namibia. Now, I have to admit, I also had a reservation specifically of how education, private education, and training facilities pop up.
Mm-hmm.
But it also brings into scope the loophole discussion. Loophole in legislation.
Yeah.
Loopholes in certain particular pieces of acts and that allow for people to open businesses.
Yeah.
I mean Helmut, for some reason, because we've got that mandatory stipulation in our legislation that says education is mandatory up until grade 12. That's secondary, it's primary and secondary, which is usually together collectively identified as basic education. Basic education is identified as mandatory and compulsory in Namibia. Ne? We sit with this idea that since this is the picture for basic education, in higher education, you as Helmut cannot open up a training institute as you are. Me as Dwight, I cannot open up a training institute as an entrepreneur or as a business person, right?
Yeah.
Let's for example say there is an artificial but also a natural how do I want to put this? Because I don't want to make it sound like a plumbing reference, but it is a plumbing reference most definitely. There's a blockage, for example, in the Namibian employment landscape.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know how many people are losing jobs and how many people are getting jobs per month. We don't, because Ministry of Labor or the labor side of the Ministry of Justice and Labor, they're pretty lax in terms of being proactive in sharing those details. And where they also
I'm more questioning about their gathering of that detail than sharing them.
Well, here's the other thing also. They highlighted that electronic platform of theirs that is supposed to host all vacancies in Namibia.
Yeah.
But you will count more vacancies in the classified section of the three or the four main daily newspapers of Namibia than you would find on that platform. And then you would ask the question of compliance and basically adherence to this particular sort of like directive to the economy. You as a private sector business, you will place your advert where you feel you want to place your advert, Helmut.
Yeah.
You will make a decision on whether you want to give a media company business of a, pay a media company to broadcast your message on the kind of vacancy that you're trying to, project out there to an audience of that media company. And this also means the kind of person that you're looking for, the kind of candidate. Now, skipping past that particular discussion, which is a completely different discussion, which is purely based on advertising,
and centering on this discussion of the health. So I was in the same particular boat. Let me also say that this debate, well, not this debate, the first three presentations opened my eyes. And when I discovered, because I was sitting like this, okay, the view from the viewers that can obviously see us now on social media, I was sitting behind the MPs.
Yeah.
And on the opposite side of that boardroom, is the whole of the people that have to present, which are private institution representatives, the three big universities, and the other slightly bigger private institutions at the end, because they were like populating the whole opposite side. And smack bang in the middle of them is a representative of the board or the whatever of the Health Professions Council, the doctor. You heard of the other doctor, where the chairperson asked, "Doctor, explain to us what this procedure is. What's the standard operating procedure for health training, health training
and approval
institutions to be registered, accredited, and to be approved?" In that line, Hamoud, in that line. And when that doctor said literally, "Chairperson, you first need to be open for business before you can be assessed and accredited. Not you go get accreditation and assessment for something that doesn't even operate
that
yet."
Doesn't exist. I mean, it wouldn't make sense, which is why I think we are, it seems like they have a conundrum on their hands because...
But who's the conundrum, Helmut?
Here's the confusion. Here's the confusion. Like they pointed out earlier in the beginning of the presentation, that parents, these trainees or these students, these institutions have financial requirements that the students have to meet. We are talking about your school fees and all the associated costs
and
of
for
being,
and,
you
and
know,
for paying outstanding fees if you've completed.
Now all those things. Basically, you have parents either directly or indirectly that are paying for these students to be trained at this institution. So you will obviously want the parents and the student to be assured that the qualifications they are studying, are legit. It has gone through all the regulatory bodies in Namibia and has been given a green light to go on.
Yeah.
And that when they get out on the other side of, on the other side of this course, they are not going to be told by institutions they apply for a job that, this is not recognized by by the relevant authorities like your NQA, for example.
So
that's a genuine concern. So you will want so obviously parents will want to know what they are investing their money into has been regulated, has been approved, have been vetted and approved by the relevant regulatory authorities. So that you have that on one side. So you have the high institutions, obviously, that would like to get the right approval and and accreditations on one side. Now, and you have a regulatory body just smacked somewhere in the middle between the students and the parents that will want assurance of the accreditation of these institutions and the regulatory bodies that have to do the accreditation and approval. Now, for the institutions, they are now caught in the middle where first they need the students for them to be assessed for accreditation and approval.
And they must have the facility.
They must have the facility.
Before they can have the students.
Yeah.
And the facility also needs to be assessed and accredited and approved. And then they must be registered before they can get the facility and the students for them to be assessed, accredited, and approved.
Now, at this point, as a parent and a student, you want to know, I think this confusion is more on the high institution side.
No. The confusion is thrown at the higher institutions from what I saw. Those first two presentations. I'll explain why, Hamoud. But first continue with your train of thought.
Yeah, look, what you have here is... It has basically brought about a lot of confusions, especially for parents and students, I imagine. Because for a high institution, I think that's where the greatest confusion is at right now. So the very, now look, it's understandable because it costs money for you to, you know, for parents and students to enroll at institutions that are already approved and accredited.
And remember,
that makes a lot of sense.
And remember, this is outside of the subsidizing scheme.
Yeah.
That MESAC began with last year for this calendar year.
Yeah.
Or this academic year. So obviously, because I can also see a question that the parents probably ask these students, but isn't this institution accredited?
Yeah.
Aren't they part of the subsidization process?
Yeah.
In higher education. And if both those answers were no, you can see someone ran to their closest member of parliament, political member.
And went like, okay.
And remember, this thing seems to be operating illegally. Go and investigate. This is technically what's also happening. That's part of that particular argument.
The confusion I find here is a very interesting one from a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
Because the students are required for assessment that leads to approval and accreditation.
Mm.
But students are also told to avoid unauthorized and unaccredited institutions.
Yeah.
Right. Now, as a high institution, how do you meet that requirement of, look, it's not like you can make up dummy students that will be there for approval purposes. And then at the end of the day, you can just get the real human ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. You will need the students here. And also, if you can look at it, the confusion here is, I think it's on three sides, because even if you look at it from an accreditation and authorizing, entity standpoint, what you have here is, how would they, assess and accredit an institution that doesn't have all the things that they require? Do they just show up at a place and assume? Now, let's just assume this class was full of students and there was a lecture here. How do you go about presenting your curriculum?
Exactly.
Like, it's kind of difficult, if not borderline impossible, to do without lectures, without the institution, without the students.
Without a whiteboard, a black chalkboard, without chalk, without a projector.
You'd be playing house. Look.
In a subtle way of saying yes, Helmut. In a subtle way, yes. Houses is all about imagination. Yeah,
exactly.
Let's imagine we are parents and they are kids. And this is the house. And then everyone is looking at where the walls.
I don't want you to get paid because of that. Look, I don't know how we're going to find the balance here, but the confusion is a very...
There is no balance, Helmut. There is no balance.
Look, as an accrediting authority, you are talking about your HPCNA, you are talking about your NQA, NDA. Now, they obviously, they need these requirements for them to do a proper assessment.
Yeah.
And the high institutions, they need the institution, and they need the students for them to meet the requirement of the regulatory authorities.
Yeah.
And the students here now are actually gonna be a little bit of guinea pigs because,
you need them.
Yeah, you need them.
They are literally the main ingredient to getting the accreditation and the approval. And the weirdest part is now.
Now, can we just have a look? We're going to need a pre-approval process on this one. That will be more like a standby. And one of the questions that was asked at the beginning was, what happens then if you are already offering all these courses?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, for the meantime that you are waiting for your approval and accreditation, you find out that...
What happens?
Yeah, you are told that, no, your approval or accreditation has been declined. Okay, now what? Because you already have students.
Yeah. No, but
that paid, by the way.
No, but here's the thing. That doctor, the second presenter, the doctor explained a nice thing. It's not the end of, after there is rejection, it's not an end of
You're business. Given a period of time.
They are actually given the recommendations on what to fix and what to improve on.
Which is a good thing. I mean,
which
fix
is another 12 years.
Yeah.
But remember, the first presenters, the first institute, remember the two guys? The first presenters were asked the same question in terms of, what if?
Yeah.
And they cited specifically, they only offer 2.5 years, because both the first two presenters said they offer 2-year courses specifically for certain things in the medical, sort of like in the medical care realm. Now, Helmut, I've been observing this situation. It seems like there's a ton of courses on offer in the medical, in the health industry.
Yeah.
A ton. And this is minus.
There are a lot of field of specialization in like all other fields, so it will make sense.
Just to and let me tell you that this is how I see, specifically doctors and nurses. They are technically the mechanics and the assistant mechanics of the human body.
Yeah.
I know it's a sick joke to make.
They are the technicians. Basically.
They are the technicians and the mechanics of the human body.
Yeah.
But to discover that there are so many things, because the same two, the first two presenters, they had totally different courses from each other.
Yeah.
Totally different courses. And this particular conversation showed also, okay, so we've got this, there's a nuance to the skills we need in the health economy, in the health industry.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm getting to my bad cop persona.
Uh-huh.
Now we start. So, I have to make a confession here. I was also in the same boat as this hypothesis about it seems like businesses are operating without necessary accreditation, registration, XYZ, XYZ. You know, all those compliance factors. But then, you know, if you rub the dust, the sand,
of your eyes,
the mud and the muck out of your eyes, Helmut, you realize. This is how we are as humans. You have to start a process first in order for the process to then be aligned to, let's say, public sector requirements for compliance and registration, all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have I not seen, in terms of just in Namibia, businesses that open up and then the thing is not even registered here in Windhoek, but the thing is operating outside of Windhoek.
Yeah.
Established business, old business. Family business of more than 50 years, and then let's, for example, say something like Independence happens in 1990. Now that business owner has to hear about business registration, company registration, projections of cash flow, and they're like, what? Bruh, I just make the money and I eat the money. It's not my money. So the whole discussion about, you know, bringing in things that makes the sector or this business venture look formal on paper.
Yeah.
In some cases, I can understand it is noise that business owners, professionals in the industry would like, they would like to get rid of this clutter. Because to them, it looks like clutter. However, when we zone in on this sector, Helmut, now actually creates more sympathy for them from my side.
Yeah,
because I thought, you know,
them students, regulatory authorities, or private institutions,
the business owners.
Okay, business owners.
Because how many people forget when you go and look at the, you know, the philosophic outreach or the philosophic position of the private sector, and you take every product and it, the product's origins or the business owner's origins. For example, people are now talking, you know, complete. You know, I'm not talking about the leftist and liberal political activists of the world, they now paint Jeff Bezos as like the world's most evilest billionaire that possibly exists. But when Bezos opened up Amazon, 20 years that direction, he was just viewed as a basic human who was trying to get a good idea in his head off the ground, and it should become, and it should, you know, just become this wonderful e-commercial product or business or entity in the broader global economic sphere. And at that stage, Jeff Bezos was lucky. Globalization was about to just rapidly just
get in full swing. Yeah.
Ne? Now, you can see, I could see Helmut when I was sitting was now behind the MPs and the guys were now presenting. I could see and I could hear from the presentations, because I walked in there with a bias. I'll also be honest, I'll confess this. I walked in there with a bias in terms of the bias was, you know, people are trying to cut corners in terms of, you know, just to make
offering
money.
They're running the institutions they're running.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then you go and sit and you think, these guys,
And this is why I'm motivating the previous point where I wanted to make about the blockage by not referencing an actual plumbing reference, but it's a blockage. Currently, right now, Helmut, we have a major blockage in the Namibian economy. We are training people, but they don't have, they can't access the economic functions or become economically active very quickly enough, meaning getting jobs, dispensing their services, aligning with businesses that need professionals to dispense the service and stuff like that. There is an obvious blockage. Now, one of the mechanisms was, obviously, if you have a background experience, qualifications, expertise in the medical and healthcare industry of Namibia, open up a training facility and then start training. But you and I, and myself specifically, I did not know of this highly centralization discussion that the public sector is ignoring to address. So, my first bias, I walked in there, sat down, came a little bit late, sure. Came a little bit late, and they were the first presentation was at that stage, I'd just begun. Set up, I sit down, I listen. I listen, presentation goes on. Because they traveled from outside of Windhoek. The first presenters were also from outside Windhoek.
Yeah.
And then the questions from the MP start. The first question, and one of the questions was the last question by the one MP, a young guy, he seems to be younger than me, one of the opposition party MPs, he asked the question to the two guys presenting and representing that first institute that was training, that was presenting, are you accredited? Now, I could see the trap. I was biased in towards, you know, supporting the trap that MP set for those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But after I left the National Assembly, after, you know, they ended just before the tea break, after I left, where the recording ends, after I left, I realized the second presenter made a point, technically, that also defends the first two presenters about, which you obviously now highlighted in our introduction already, was you can't train if you don't have three major ingredients already on the ground. If you don't have the facility, you don't have the students, you don't have a curriculum, you don't have lecturers and tutors already, you can't get assessed on anything. You cannot. Now, here's the major concern, Helmut. When I realized during the first two presentations that the Health Professions Council board chairperson or representative was sitting in the middle. There were two doctors. There were two men sitting here, like right in the middle of the field of view. And when the chairperson of the standing committee referred one question to a representative of the Health Professions Council, then I realized that the MPs, our representatives that we voted for, okay, in some cases we didn't vote for them. I mean, we voted for their presidential candidates, their party leaders, and their parties. We didn't vote for some of these MPs, I'll be honest, because we didn't. It seems like they are not understanding the assignment. They are missing the assignment's objective. Because the assignment for them stems from the statement of this hypothesis, which is the motion, which was brought forward, you know, between last year and this year. Okay. The next thing, Helmut, that sort of like also made me aware of a situation here was the contradiction of that press statement from MASAC that I sent you just before we began. And some of the questioning from the MPs. Now remember, when with the first presenter, when that MP asked the private institute, "Are you guys accredited?" I could see the trap. I was actually hoping that the guy said, "No, we are not registered. Just be honest."
Mm-hmm.
But then they said yes, and then the MPs quickly verified there with a list of documents they were sitting in front of them, and they said, "No, why are you lying? We can see here that you're not accredited."
Yeah.
But then the next realization popped up, Helmut, when that the MPs also said, and they revealed this, that they met before this engagement. They met with the NQA and the NTA and with the Health Professions Council to understand how accreditation
is conducted
and registration is conducted for private training institutions,
training professionals for the healthcare sector. And then I was like, okay, so you were, but then I realized this is just sort of like an exploratory exercise that the MPs are doing. Until that.
So it's one of those things where you already know the answer, so you just want to.
Yeah, you just want to see if they're going to actually say yes or no,
mm-hmm.
and what the course of the direction the discussion takes from there.
Yeah.
Until that doctor that did the second presentation showed up. He shows up, Helmut, and he explains things. He answers the questions. Because here's the thing. From the first presenters, I think they were nervous because they were basically put up first to present.
Yeah.
But the first presenters didn't actually answer the questions of the questions that the MPs sent to them and the brief for them to answer the questions in a chronological order and to keep it as short as possible. So obviously the MPs, you know, they were generating some sort of a obvious reaction to the first presentation. Second presentation comes along by that doctor. He answers it spot on. Crisp, concise. Sticks to the assignment at hand.
Yeah.
Then the questions start. And then the MP, the one MP, I won't mention names, but she's from the ruling party. She asks a leading question. I know you listened, you heard the question.
Yep.
She asks the question, she makes a statement, and then she says, don't you agree that there's a proliferation of private institutions? Now, how do you ask me, as a business owner in the same sector, that I think there's too many of my competitor? What are you asking me to do? To say yes, so that you shut down the other competitors, or potentially shut me down?
Okay, you know, now that you brought up the point of sort of like the line of questioning, I started picking this up from our MPs with when I said I started picking this up, I mean how interesting the line of questioning is for our MPs when they are doing this standing committee type of initiatives or more like engagements. Yeah.
Yeah.
And during the, was that 2023-2024, the Oshagati Courtroom do with the Standing Committee on Constitution and Legal Affairs.
Yeah.
They met with the judiciary. You know, they asked one question that seemed to have, should have been obvious for me for people coming from, Standing Committee on the, a parliamentary Standing Committee. They are coming from Parliament.
Yeah.
So these are our lawmakers, basically. Now, one of the questions that was asked was, okay, since there is a sluggish, because one of the main part of the question that they tried to get answers of is, why has it taken this long to replace one door? And now, from the beginning of the, from the beginning, they understood that because in that report, the Standing Committee themselves point out that when they met with the, with representatives from the Ministry of Works.
Yeah.
They were told, they were basically told it is easy to replace a door. We know that.
Yeah.
But, since there are procedures in place that we have to follow, procedures are the one that are making things.
Which is the Procurement Act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, they point this out in the beginning of the report. But, when I watched the video of that presentation, one of the standing committee representative, asked a question, the question was, are there any other means of sort of like fast tracking this type of thing so that, you can quickly, procure something? Yeah. So that it doesn't take you 5 months to replace a door.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, okay, hang on a second. If you're an MP and you are here to have a procurement type of engagement, you should know that the Public Procurement Act has a provision for emergency procurement. But the thing is, and I like how and that's what the judiciary told them. Yes, there is type of emergency procurement is the Public Procurement Act makes a provision for that.
And the weirdest was those MPs actually wanted emergency procurement to be a thing.
Uh-huh.
And literally what did one of the Auditor General's reports say about Ministry of Health?
Oh boy,
you
wait.
Are placing things under emergency procurement which should not be there.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and that came, I think, just the following year after the Oshakati courtroom door of the Constitutional Legal Affairs Committee engagement with you know, with the judiciary, and that's what the judiciary, that's exactly what the judiciary told them, that look, yes, there is a provision in the Public Procurement Act of emergency procurement, but the definition in the Public Procurement Act of what constitutes emergency procurement is a very slim one.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a very slim one. There must be, some, you know, some kind of a big disaster that has been known, you know, and made public in terms of public announcement the whole country.
Mm.
Now, a door to fit in that definition of public, you know, of emergency procurement is going to be very difficult. And they, you know, the gentleman from the judicial told them that, look, I will follow these laws in place to the letter. And my translation of his statement is, I'm not going to get into trouble because I wanted to replace a door.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, until you change these laws to make, you know, for emergency procurement to be wide enough to fit in a situation like the one that we are dealing with at the moment, which was replacing a courtroom door at the time, I'm not jumping through hoops to replace a door because I know that later I'm going to get into trouble for doing that.
And then,
and the Ministry of Health did the exact same thing. And guess what? Ended up having a whole report on exactly the same thing.
Yep.
Which I had a good time. Shout out to the Ministry of Health. Now,
you remember we both had a good time on that scenario.
Look, I think that is pointing to the technicalities that comes with the legislations we have in place. And to some degree, the lack of flexibilities. And I, look, again, what you have here is a very confusing scenario of if you have too much flexibilities, it leaves room for fish rot. But if you have too much, you know, if you have less flexibility,
why are you whispering it?
If you have less flexibilities, you have an Oshakati courtroom door.
Yeah.
If you have too many, if you have too many flexibilities, you have fish rot and all kinds of rot.
Yeah.
Now, so too many flexibilities, fish rot. Too less flexibilities, Oshakati courtroom door.
Yeah.
So we have to find a sweet spot in the middle that will allow for enough flexibilities for us to get the job done, but not too much flexibilities for us to end up with something that has a rot at the end. This is fascinating talking about it, but not if you are in one of these committees or the institutions.
But that's literally the thing, Ahmed. The understanding, and that's where I also realized the kind of people we are putting into legislative positions. For example, for example, National Assembly, National Council. You get an assignment there in the National Assembly from a motion. The motion makes a statement without bringing any scientific proof that this is actually illegal. Nah. You don't go and consult a lawyer, or you go ask or make a phone call to a CEO or whoever of any of the SOEs. Because this motion comes through from an opposition party member, from PDM. Nah. This motion. So you now throw the assignment to a standing committee to go and interrogate a discussion. But that second presentation from that doctor who had to drive so far from the north to come and present. And this is the things that I feel sorry for Namibia's economic processes.
Yeah.
I have to waste my time coming to come be interrogated in Windhoek by people who don't know
what's the going on outside.
You are going through there wherever you are in the regions. You don't know what's going on. And then the worst part is, you even see that the centralization discussion, Helmut, literally even clouds the way we think about the national project of Namibia.
Yeah.
Okay, so after that presentation of that second presenter, the doctor, gets into the Q&A. I'm skipping now the misleading question, or the leading question, not misleading, the leading question that was asked. The leading question, he answers. And then he answers it very, very lovely. He says, what must I do if the person that has to accredit me is sitting in Windhoek, has to make an appointment with me to travel up to the north to come and assess me, accredit me, and then has to drive back to Windhoek with that discussion?
Mm-hmm.
First things first. This comes through same example of the Namfisa situation with the micro-lenders presentation. The SOEs are siloed, the SOEs are centralized, and the SOEs are really not working in towards the same national prosperity agenda that we've been trying to achieve since 2000. Since 2000, Helmut, not since independence, since 2000. So the SOEs themselves are actually contradicting this whole discussion of actual true economic development cascading through the country. Actually, ne, they're probably one of the reasons also why the trickle-down economics doesn't work in Namibia. But I'm actually reaching and stretching with that particular, you know, statement because I'd need proof of it. But one of the functional proofs in terms of actually doing the work is we can see, for example, it's from these two presentations, the microlender one from Namfisa and this one now with the private institutions. Okay. Second major red flag. Now, the statement I shared with you from MASAC that says the public must be vigilant and report unregistered and unaccredited higher education facilities.
Yeah.
But then at this presentation, it comes up, I cannot be accredited if I don't have a facility. I cannot be accredited if I don't have a curriculum. I cannot be accredited if I don't have any enrolled students. And I cannot be accredited if I do not have professionals training these students. Now, what in God's green earth is MASAC announcing, Helmut?
And look at it again from the NQA and NTA, HPCNA, you know, point of view.
And the thing is,
they cannot do any assessment to do the accreditation if there is nothing there.
If there are no students, if there are no lecturers, if there is no facility. Do you know what's the loveliest thing also?
Yeah.
The one MP goes and says there, yeah, you say you have a laboratory. And the guy goes like, whoa, no, I didn't say laboratory.
Oh.
I said facility. Remember the second presenter. He corrected them. He was like, no, I didn't say laboratory. There's a difference between laboratory and facility. And I knew it. Okay, you're dealing with a real professional, MP.
They say a running joke in Timbuktu that goes with
let's hear it.
That goes something like you probably have been eating a lot of catfish, and that is look. I don't know. And
I know English
doesn't do it any justice. Believe me,
deliver punchlines like that.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, in the environment where I grew up, that running joke is, a running joke is very common, because it is believed. I still have to find out if it has some legit medical research that backs that up. That when you eat, catfish a lot, you end up having ears problems.
Is it hearing problems or ears problems?
Hearing problems, you know, because your ears basically begins to degrade, anatomically.
Where did that thing come from?
Don't ask, which is why I said no side, because...
I thought that eating food helps you with...
Look, man.
With life.
Don't be the messenger.
Now you're being told if you eat too much of something, your hearing starts fading. How did they get there?
And you have boiled the heck. Now, if you have seen how, a catfish is cooked. Especially, in the way that it's cooked in my culture.
Yeah.
There is not, the only microorganism that's in that catfish, if there are any that will survive that type of cooking, must be immortal.
Mm.
because that thing is cooked like crazy. Mm. Because the whole thing is basically after the cooking process.
Yeah.
After the cooking process, it's gonna look like a mushroom basically. It's cooked to its last bits. But anyway. And
are you saying it's overcooked, Helmut?
It's not overcooked. It's let's say with the kavango cooked, because that's the right word.
Okay, how long is kavango cooked? How long in time frame? Because I know a fish.
Okay,
in many cases cannot be more than 30 minutes.
More than 30 minutes? How do I put this? Have you seen Hemalde?
What is Hemalde?
What's this? Have you seen? Yeah, mince. Have you seen mince?
What's mince?
Mince, like the.
Mince.
Yeah.
Oh.
What is mince?
Look, man. Can you stop giving it out?
Because I was like, mince? M-E-A-N-S?
Yeah. You see, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's basically how a catfish that's cooked is going to look like.
But it's mince without a sauce. It's just mince with salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. After it's cooked like crazy. Yeah. It's definitely cooked beyond 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, coming back to this, the reason why I brought that up is, look, I totally understand maybe the MP misheard, or it's just the lack of understanding on the technical differences. And that's not something that's new. That's basically, I would be asking the same question if I was having a conversation with someone from a different discipline, because I don't know the terminologies and how they applied in that discipline. Yeah. And, remember when we had a cyber security discussion here?
Mm.
Yeah. The two gentlemen that came here to explain, the different terminologies that are used that are more often confused by those of us that are not in that discipline.
Yeah.
So the facility and laboratory, that's a little bit obvious, but no judging. But here's the thing now. You now have one big problem here. This motion of this health training institutions here in Namibia, and how they are regulated, how they are registered, and how they are approved, and their accreditations.
Yeah.
That motion was passed. That motion was passed in Parliament, and then Parliament decided to send a parliamentary standing committee on fact-finding mission to sort of like answer the question.
Mm.
And these initiatives, I like these initiatives not only because they produce reports like this, which can be discussed on, which can be openly discussed on a national level. It's part of growing up as a country, not only academic-wise, but also economic-wise. Because you are talking about the future of our Namibia's medical practice.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at it from that standpoint, you begin to realize that there are a lot of players that are involved in the paperwork that have to do with approving this. But before sending this parliamentarians to sort of like try to find an answer to the proliferation of health training institutions in Namibia.
Yeah.
And they met with the regulatory bodies like NQA. Now, take for example the representatives of NTA, NQA, and HPCNA to sort of like look at how does this process of accreditation works?
Yeah.
And what are some of the challenges that they are facing? And if there are any contradictions in the legislations and requirements that these three institutions have in place, because it was pointed out by the institutions that have to go through all these three plus regulatory bodies.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, I feel like that's something that the MPs should have learned from the regulatory bodies themselves.
But it didn't come out like that, Hamoud. Remember the first Q&A, ne?
Yeah.
It sounded like they had all the cards. If we're talking now in poker references.
Yeah.
It sounded like they knew the picture.
The regulatory authorities have everything in check. The
regulatory authorities gave them a presentation because they said so with the first presentation that they first spoke to NTA, NQA, HPCNA, and Ministry of Health about how the
how the supposed process works.
Yeah.
But when two private sector entities came and said, you first need to be active before you can get assessed and accredited and approved, then what were they presented? Because even the HPSCNA guy that was sitting there, because the chairperson of the standing committee, Madam, what's her name, Marilyn, when she bounced the one question to the representative of the Health Professions Council of Namibia, and she asked, what does it sound like to you? And then he said, this seems to be the standard procedure in the sector, which is sort of like, quote unquote, how can I call it? Like an agreed upon process between these entities that aim to provide accreditation and approval and the private sector training facilities. Now, if this is the situation, my question still stands, Hamoud. Where did this MP get this hypothesis that these facilities probably are in some way, not legit?
And they met with the Minister of Health, right?
Yeah.
So the point of the, the sort of like a seemingly very mixed up requirements that the training institutions has to meet for them to be accredited and approved.
Mm.
Now, those things are popping up at around the same time that the Minister of Health, who the MP said they met, pointing out, basically warning, and that's reasonable enough, warning parents and students not to enroll in institutions that are not approved. What I'm seeing here is what was pointed out in relation to the Ministry of Agriculture and Ministry of Environment by the Office of the Auditor General, that there is a silo, type of working taking place here.
Yeah.
Because, from my point of view, the Ministry of, if the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Health representatives, HPCNA, NTA, and NQA, came together and looked at that whole accreditation process. From the standpoint of the private institutions that require their approval for them to operate, I think they should have seen this conflicting scenario of, of the Ministry of Health saying, telling the whole, and also it's not just the Ministry of Health, by the way, the NQ and both, and all these regulatory authorities, because they fall under the Ministry of Health. Not only are they telling, students and parents reasonable enough not to enroll at institutions that are not approved and accredited.
Yeah.
Because again, it costs money. You don't want to pay a lot of a ridiculous amount of money, in tuition and other fees for your, for a child only to find out the institution has given your kid qualifications that are not accredited by NQA. So that's understandable.
And I'm going to tell you a story of an accredited institution that has done that.
Finish
that point for them.
I think what the good doctor pointed out in the second presentation, this I feel like this is something that the Ministry of Health and the regulatory authorities that are involved in accrediting and approving the registering all these institutions before coming to an engagement like this, because it came out, at least to me, like this Ministry of Health and its agencies are working in so much silos. I had to get that from a private institution.
Yeah. And that these MPs, technically, they had an engagement beforehand, being told, hey, listen, guys, it's not my problem. I'm training people in Oshakati. And there's no representatives to come and assess me from the town, from Ongwediva, from Ondangwa.
Because everything is central.
Because everything sits in Vendu.
Okay, now before you get to your story, third, it's a good thing you brought up earlier the whole trickle-down economy reference.
Yeah.
What that brings up is, I feel like our centralization, at least that's my conclusion from a very limited economic knowledge, our centralization is one of those problems that's now putting a burden on City of Windhoek having to subsidize pretty much the entire country.
But that's the thing, Hamoud. It seems like the same mentality permeates through some of our SOEs. They're supposed to have offices across the country to invest not just salary income, but also project income, procurement income, and revenues through the country. That is the whole reason why we have a country. It is so that public money stimulates economic activity across the country.
Okay, but every region has an administrative capital.
Yes, every region has a regional council.
Has a regional council. And every administrative capital, from what I get, has an extension of the head office of pretty much every ministry we have, you know, we have in Namibia.
Yeah.
And therefore, through this administrative, through the branches that they have through, in administrative capitals, they dispense their services through them. Take, for example, the Ministry of Health will have an extension office in all the regions, the administrative capitals.
Mm.
And, so, when you say someone that is going to accredit an institution in Shakati or Wadiva will have to come from Windhoek, my first question is, doesn't the Ministry of Health have
But the Ministry of Health probably, because remember the guy said they've got an MOU with the ministry.
Yeah.
In the region.
Yeah.
Just to supply trainees and interns for the region. Ne?
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. But this is not an MOU with the SOEs that operate in the higher education realm.
Yeah.
It's with the Ministry of Health.
So now the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Education have,
has nothing to do with that MOU as well.
Okay.
Cause that MOU was directly with Ministry of Health. So it's once again your silos.
Yeah.
Discussion. So Ministry of Education doesn't know that Ministry of Health has a need. Cause I'm putting an assumption there.
Mm-hmm.
Ministry of Education does not know that Ministry of Health has a need in Oshakati or that... What's the region of Oshakati?
The point I'm driving to is that the whole assessing officer.
Yeah.
In terms of accreditation coming from Windhoek. The Ministry of Health has, the Ministry of Education, of which the accreditation institutions falls under, have,
That would be Ministry of Finance. Technically, SOEs fall under Ministry of Finance.
All these have
administrative bosses, Helmut.
But all these three bosses have offices in administrative, the administrative capitals of all these regions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do they have to drive from Commerce region if they have, if they have extension offices in all the regions?
But here's the thing. This is the SOE that is asked, like Namfisa was asked, how do you deal with an issue on the ground?
Yeah.
Remember the SOE, is one of the government's connection or bridging factors or functionaries directly into the economy.
Yeah.
Now, there have been occasions specifically when Minister of Industrialization and Trade still existed when Minister Lucia Epumbu was still the minister before the current administration and everything.
Yeah.
And before she got shifted to Ministry of Home Affairs was that at a couple of events where that ministry, that now defunct ministry, presented like public engagement platforms, there would be one or two members of the public who would be business owners standing up and saying, please minister, can you please define to me why government is directly competing with private sector in the economy? And in some cases, you can sometimes see if we go to Cat Telecoms, that's a direct competition by government with private sector in the telecom sector. When you go to what's the one's name? What's the other one's name? Tochman.
Which is
health. Let's stay on health. Mm-hmm. Health is the most obvious one in this discussion. You've got two government-owned universities.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one private university. Then you've got a whole bunch of
I'm using the label university loosely to identify the big three.
Yeah.
Then you've got the other emerging private training institutions who require, you know, these necessary sort of like approvals, registrations, and accreditations to facilitate formal recognition. But you've got two government universities, because the president is the chancellor of one, and last year the speaker, I don't know if it's the new speaker, speaker Kugungelwa Amadila, is now going to be the chancellor of NUST, but the previous speaker was Mr. Chancellor, Kashivivo is the chancellor of NUST. So you've got these two institutions which are directly also competing with private sector, privately owned training institutions in the healthcare, in the health training sector. Now, if we sit with that, that business strategy, that business ecosystem analysis right there, government is directly competing with private sector in the same sphere. If we sit with that particular analysis as well, government is directly subsidizing institutions that they own. And not privately owned institutions. If it was, if the playing field was one of, okay, if you have a private institution, Helmut, and I'm a government owned institution, and the and the ministry doesn't give me any subsidies for enrollment or anything to champion the national development, human capital development agenda, but the playing field is level, you can go apply for the same bank loan that I'm applying for, then you can see competition levels probably could be the same. But because things are lopsided specifically, you can only imagine specifically, okay, certain things are where the private institutions are directly competing with government institutions. Okay, let's take that obvious statement out. Now we focus on this particular talking point, this thing of the siloed operations. And it's a good thing you keep hammering on that point. You know, there are regional authorities, there are regional extension offices of each of these ministries.
Exactly.
But you and I know already with NAMFISA, that's not possible. And it seems like and from that second guy's presentation of this higher education, this training institution presentation, this guy literally said this person has to come from Windhoek that has to come and assess him. Now your question is basically asking, so why
do they have to come from?
Why has the SOEs not expanded and opened up offices across the country? Now I'm using SOEs loosely to encompass everyone. Well, Helmut, the first and obvious thing that you could probably assume is a budgeting scenario. But who does the NQA compete with? Who does the NTA compete with? With no one. They are the only ones that can approve and accredit and, you know, give authorizations and basically recommendations for a compliance to be met with regards to training in this economy. And it's also them specifically that have to ensure now with the green industries transition and just energy transition that Namibia has to undergo, that Namibia's vocational and training centers are up to scratch. And obviously, there's a lot of assessment with regards to that heightened attention for the green industries development that we are also forgetting about basic things like the health sector. Now, the government wants to roll out, from the previous administration, the government wants to roll out that universal healthcare discussion. Helmut, today, ne, I watched a discussion where, remember when we did the social justice report?
Yeah.
Ne, which was written by those bunch of economists. So one of those economists that wrote that report, they also then submitted a letter, like an opinion piece letter, but it was contributed with multiple of those authors of that report.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of them also co-authored a particular letter that was submitted to The Guardian, that British British massive publication, to basically justify things like a wealth tax for the super rich in the country. Now, the lady that was now she was interviewed on this one digital platform, which is just a completely YouTube-based news and discussion channel, Novara, because I follow them. And the presenter, Michael, interviews this lady. And then she basically explains a policy that Namibia is trying to achieve here. But the thing that we are not incorporating in the discussion is the monetary representation of rolling this policy out. So, is it Thailand? Yeah, Thailand. Ne? Under Thaksin Shinawatra. You remember the disgraced... Because he was, if you want to know what corruption is on a super level, ne?
On an industrial scale.
What that guy did. But the guy, one of his sort of like milestones, ne, Hamid, was a universal healthcare mechanism. Yebo. A universal healthcare mechanism that every Thai person could pay 32 baht. The universal healthcare mechanism's name was known as 32 baht. Doesn't matter who you are in the country, doesn't matter what station of life you occupy in the country, if you go to any medical facility in Thailand, you only paid 32 baht. That is the national currency of Thailand. 32 baht, probably like $1 in today's, probably slightly more, but since it happened so far back. Another scenario was obviously also highlighting the purposeful policy and legislation and developmental legislation that aimed to provide jobs in every part of Thailand. So as to say, listen, you know, if you're a doctor or a nurse or a surgeon, there is an incentive, meaning those guys also got paid more to work in other parts of the country outside of the major urban centers of Thailand. So as to say, go and spread this particular mechanism, this particular sector's overall altruistic aim, meaning providing healthcare for all across the country. Now, at the heart of the presentations that I could observe that was happening now, specifically here with the private training institutions, was a discussion where it was accusatory. The flavor of the presentations, of the discussion, the engagement, was one of an accusatory nature, meaning an accusation is made, which is the motion, which is also deemed as the hypothesis, which has to be basically rejected or accepted in one way or another. Obviously, this is still exploratory. Remember what standing committees do? They go and gather information to compile in a report, and then the report gets submitted to the National Assembly or the National Council or wherever, you know? So we'll probably only see that report at the end of this year, before the start of the new year. This particular engagements report. So, the language, the messaging, the undertone in the messaging, everything sounded accusatory. And in the broader scheme of things, we all know as Namibians that our training cannot just take place in Windhoek. Our training cannot just be concentrated in Windhoek. Our training cannot just be concentrated specifically between three institutions in this country. Our training specifically cannot just be deemed as a government-only subsidized mechanism. The training also requires, okay, so we train so many doctors or people that can be doctors, and only so many could find employment in the economy. And then what happened to the other particular professionals? Oh, a handful of them opened up training institutes to train the next batch of medical professionals for the Namibian economy. But for some reason, and that's why I say the undertone, because you when you look at it in terms of like being scientific, you don't see the word. You don't see the sentence that says training must only be concentrated in Windhoek. You don't see the statement that says training is only a government responsibility. Mm-hmm. Anyone can open up a school.
Anyone can train someone else, and anyone can provide education. Anyone. Remember this, dear listeners. You can open up a business. That is the entire particular spirit of the modern Namibia we sit with. If you are trained, you can use your skills to open up a business. One of the business ventures and opportunities is in the education realm. Now we get to the creme de la creme of messaging. So, Ministry of Education, you asked me the question, Amr. I'm coming back to your question. We've already satisfied that potentially this could be a budget constraint on the SOEs.
In terms of expansion of manpower and offices. Yeah,
and offices. Now, we realize now from that presentation of that second presenter, where he said the MOU is with Ministry of Health. Ministry of Education doesn't know that him and Ministry of Health has this, because he didn't mention it. So my assumption is,
they're not aware.
Ministry of Health does not know, the Ministry of Education does not know that Ministry of Health has this particular training MOU with this institute to supply trainees, interns for medical facilities of Ministry of Health in that region. The man even said that he's got a copy of the document, but he didn't bring it with for the presentation. So, this particularly means that it exists. It's an agreement. It's an MOU. Although an MOU is not an agreement. An MOU is just an understanding.
We agree, but, you know, if I don't, you can't hold me accountable.
Yeah, but it's because it's not a contract.
Yeah.
And it's also not an agreement, because a contract is an agreement, but not all agreements are contracts. Remember this also, guys. Please. If your girlfriend does not want to come over, please. It's not an agreement. After she said yes earlier that day, it's not an agreement.
If you have already finished the 5 liters of peso at the time, that's on you.
Of what? Of what?
Mm.
Of what? Okay.
Like Viagra, but in Shwambo.
Okay. Okay. So, the next thing.
Sometimes I also wonder where this nonsense comes from. But anyway, go on.
The next thing is, for all SOEs, right, the actual boss is Ministry of Finance, because it's in their label. It says Ministry of Finance and Public Enterprises.
Yeah.
The actual boss for all SOEs is Ministry of Finance. So if NTA and NQA fall under MASAC,
MASAC, if NQA and NTA falls under MASAC on the other side of the break.
Okay, right then. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. We're 30 minutes into the hour of 5. And this is where the time now becomes interesting. It's 30 minutes past 5 or 30 minutes to 6. You know, that's, take your pick. But we continue with the interesting discussion in relation to regulation and service provision in the health training sector in Namibia. Dwight?
Yeah. So, the point I just wanted to highlight was that the actual boss for SOEs is Ministry of Finance. MASAC, under which NTA and NQA, under anyone's understanding out there in the broader Namibian landscape about the formations, the positioning, and who needs to report to who.
Chain of command.
Yeah, let's use a straightforward particular military terminology.
Very military.
Chain of command, you would assume, is primarily just MASAC for NTA and NQA. No. Chain of command is actually Ministry of Finance. MASAC is like, we need to think about Ministry of Finance, Hamoud, as the TV show that ladies were talking about 2 weeks ago, The Polygamist.
You heard about that TV show?
Yeah, I heard of it.
Yeah, I also didn't watch it.
Yeah, me
on my illegal, you know, Russian / Southeast Asian website. I see it, but I was like, really? Really? No. So,
can never be me.
So, we have to think about Minister of Finance as a guy with multiple wives.
Yeah.
So, technically, Minister of Finance has to go, if you look at this discussion, they have to supervise, SOEs in combination with a system ministry. So this would be, let's for example say, Ministry of Education, or MESAC specifically with its plethora of directorates, and its SOEs under those directorates. This could be Ministry of Agriculture and Water Land Reform, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, and the SOEs that fall under that. That would be in many cases like NAM Water, Fisheries Observer, Agency. What's the other one's name from? What's that other agency's name that falls under Ministry of Agriculture? Many of the farming ones associated with the farming ones. And so the list goes on. You know, you just look for, you identify a ministry and then you find Ministry of Finance there if there's an SOE that has to report to that Ministry of Finance. So, the main boss here is actually Ministry of Finance.
Yeah.
The main boss. But, you and I, we're already identifying, how the siloed operations are still cascading into, you know, discussions that the standing committees are now engaging in the broader economic discussion. Now, human capital development is obviously fundamental to Namibia because we invest a lot in education, we invest a lot in health, which are the two primary sectors that dominate human capital development. But I mean, and this is now where I make a pretty strong statement on this scenario. How do we not realize in plain basic English that when it comes to the health training scenario, we really need to decentralize a lot quicker? Because it doesn't help, Helmut. I'm training people in Windhoek.
Yeah.
And the job opportunity sits in Gam. I'm training people in Windhoek. And the job opportunity sits on the border, literally between Namibia and South Africa. I'm training people in Windhoek. And the job opportunity is literally there in Ruakana, on the border with Angola. Or the job opportunity is literally, let's say, in Korihas. Now, where, and this is obviously what you experienced yourself as well, as a, you know, a bush teacher. Hamoud, that'll be your new name. But you saw it. The job opportunity was not in the urban settlements.
Yeah.
Because those vacancies were filled, ne?
Yeah.
The opportunity, the need that the Ministry of Education had assessed at that time, they realized there was great need outside of the urban settlements.
Yeah.
Those parents living in those rural areas do not have money to send the kids to the urban settlements. So the government has to bring the service to the people in the rural areas.
Yep.
Now, these MPs were sitting there making accusatory, let me use another one. They were making an insinuations that somehow these training institutions are operating
illegally.
Let me use the other Latin phrase, are operating mala fide, not in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys who were presenting were saying, but we are operating in bona fide,
mm-hmm,
in good faith because we are complying.
Mm-hmm.
But someone is popping up with a messaging that is trying to push in the other direction. Now, I clearly, me and three other journalists, we got up, we went and sat outside. The national broadcaster people packed up their cameras and everything. They also realized there was nothing here. After the third and the fourth presentation,
mm-hmm,
they also realized there was nothing. And we stood outside and we said, like, because I asked them, guys, what is the actual point going on here? What are these MPs trying to drive at?
You know, I like the fact that this is a norm in my country. Look, it's one of those transparency, you know, aspects I would point towards in terms of, you know, in terms of public, you know, let me just say public engagements, because it really brings up, you know, a lot of people, a lot of players from different, both from a practicing and a regulating institutions. So when you bring these two together, a lot of light comes into how the a certain environment is operating, not just in a positive light, but in terms of challenges encountered by both parties. And in this case, when the, you know, when the national training institutions, when the training institutions that offers the training service provision were brought with the regulators and the lawmakers, because you have lawmakers and you have regulators that are applying those laws, because
these lawmakers that we heard
The lawmakers show up and ask questions in terms of, okay, are this and this and these laws that we are that we are making, are they being followed? So the regulatory authorities that are operating based on the foundation of these laws and now have to answer questions on whether these laws are being applied properly, and the, you know, the institutions that are operating, you know, that are being regulated by these institutions based on the laws that are coming from lawmakers, if these institutions are following these laws, and if there are any challenges in terms of application or any questions or any ambiguities in terms of interpretations of these laws, you really have you know, all the three players at one place, because at the end of the day, what we want is to build an effective medical medical discipline in Namibia that offers the best medical service provisions, medical associated service provisions. Now, except one thing that we learned, which I think is a very good lesson, is I would say there is a lot of miscommunication taking place from a regulatory standpoint, and that miscommunication is coming from the way that the regulatory requirement is laid out in the regulation, in the regulatory laws. That means, for me, for on this discussion, the regulatory authorities and lawmakers have, you know, they have a lot of conversations to have with regards to clarifying what they want, you know, private institutions that want to run national, training institutions. What do they want? What do they expect of them? Like, because the regulations as it stands is, for you to have a training institution, you must be accredited. Excellent. I want to follow that regulation. I want an accreditation. I want I want to register my business. Excellent. Now, what procedures should I follow? Excellent. Thank you for asking that question. The procedures that you must follow is, you must have an institution, a curriculum, lecturers and students.
Not institution, I would. You must have a facility.
Yes, a facility. You must have a facility, a curriculum, lecturers and students, so that, you know, so that when we come to assess you, we must find all this. Except, these are the very same guys that are saying, don't train if you are not authorized. Now you see the confusion. The confusion for me is from a legislative, a regulative, and from a legislative and a regulative point of view.
Yeah.
So they have to iron that out so that they send a clear message of what should be done and what should not be done. By those that want to venture into the business of service providing training institutions, not just in the medical field, but as you can imagine, this is happening in pretty much every institution. Even if you want to register, for example, an education institution, and one thing that we know is that high institutions more often start with with one course or one discipline, and then they expand into offering multiple different courses. So I would point all the fingers to lawmakers and the regulators, to lawmakers, because they are making the laws that the regulators are operating on. Now
they are responsible.
They are responsible because the institutions that the private institutions, they just want to know what the what they are required to do so they can follow those. At least most of them would like to do that. Mm. Except the requirements now that the private institution medical training institutions or nursing health training institutions, they seem to be a little bit of a confusion of what they must do.
Yeah.
Have students for us to assess you. Don't have students before we assess you.
What kind of messaging are you sending? How can you say yes, no? How can you say 6-7?
That went Gen Alpha really fast.
Now it's Gen Z. It's Gen Z.
That's Gen Z.
6-7.
And
look, if you ask them what 6-7 means,
look,
you will never get a straight answer.
But I've come to learn that you'll never get a straight answer because from the look of things, they are just shouting things not even they know.
They will say blue. What's blue? No, I'm just saying blue.
Now, of course, some clarifications in terms of what is needed must be put out there for anyone that would like to start a health training institution to know that, okay, you know what, this is what is meant. And when it comes to ambiguity in terms of interpretation or requirement of following legislations, this is not new. It's the world over. So all it just needed is for lawmakers to clarify, to clarify in the legislations what is required so that the regulatory authorities can follow what is written down to the T and explain that to the training institutions so they can follow it. But here's the confusion which I pointed out earlier. I think this is going to be this is one heck of a conundrum for both lawmakers and the regulatory authorities. Once again, it's impossible to assess something that's not there.
Yeah, it's also a bit weird to say we will only assess you after you've made investments, you've spent money.
Yeah, you have spent money, and then we'll.
Let's get down to the crux of everything. It also looks weird to say, spend money first before we assess you. Which anyway is how a business process starts.
Yeah.
You will anyway spend money first to get the thing off the ground.
Yeah.
And then you will go and apply for your stuff. But this dilemma, this conundrum, it basically opens up a specific misunderstanding, Helmut, that looks at the broader education sector as well.
Yeah.
Because we can obviously see that in great length, there will be a need also once again in the future. And I have been sitting with this idea. We really need more universities.
Yeah.
But they cannot be based in Windhoek. I am against Windhoek's centralization dominance of Namibia's economic development agenda. Windhoek is literally the anchor holding us back, Helmut. Windhoek has the most jobs on offer. Windhoek has the most companies here. Windhoek provides the best services. Windhoek provides the best conveniences. But places, for example, let's go to the north. Oshakati and Rundu can offer it.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says, go and open up the University of Oshakati. Go and open up the Higher Technical Education Institute of Rundu. Go and open up the University of Swakopmund. But for whatever reason, Namibians believe everything must be in Windhoek. The first thing we are struggling to deal with in Namibia is combating urban and rural to urban migration. Why? Oh, because UNAM is here. Oh, because NAST is here. Oh, because the big city lights and everything else is here. So now Windhoek looks like Disneyland to the rest of the country. We really need to change this, Helmut.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the 2023 population census. One thing that that seemed to indicate, if you look at the urban to rural migration comparison between the 2023 statistics and the 2011 ones,
yeah.
is that the more the population is going to increase in the commerce region, especially Windhoek, the more you will see, the more it will create this business environment type of, because there are a lot of consumers.
Yeah,
yeah, and the next thing you're gonna see is. Even more centralization, because the more people are, the more people are going to be concentrated in Windhoek, the more it will open up a lot of business opportunities, and the more you'll see people setting up all kinds of business installations.
Yeah.
And again, as a result, you have more urban and rural, more rural to urban migration. Population expansion, consumer potential expansion, business expansion, even more centralization. Okay.
Amut, you can see this still being the template 10 years from now at the next census. The next census, if you now follow the time frame, 2023 would be 2033. It will still be the same thing. And everything will just highlight massive urbanization pockets, Irongo, Komas, potentially Kietmans,
Yeah.
And then you will just see, let's for example say like Arundu and the three northern major settlements, Oshakati, Ondangwa, Ongwediva. It'll be the same template. Ochivrongo, maybe. Or Ochivrongo would just, because Ochivrongo technically is in stagnation. It's a go-between. It's the Ochodon Juba region is literally the go-between between Komas and the far northern, northeast, and Kunene, northwest regions. That's what Ochodon Juba plays a role. Ochodon Juba's current role, if you look at it, in the development agenda of Namibia, is basically, it's just a region with roads.
Namibia has beautiful roads.
Even though it's potentially the region there with the most farms, for the agricultural sector, has the most diverse agricultural, sort of like presentation.
Yep.
From those farms, because it's got game farms, livestock farms, crop farms and facilities. Farms. And that one too, because it's a crop, Helmut. Remember, it's a crop.
Yeah, it's a crop.
So, but Ochodon Juba's facade, its image to me as a Namibian is, it's a region with roads. You go through, you come back through. You drive through, you drive back through. It doesn't say Ochodon Juba is the region to be. It connects me to the north, it connects me to the northeast, connects me to the northwest, but I just drive through and I drive out. Even though I've got like family and relatives in Ochodon Juba region, Helmut, I see more, there will be more, what you call it, economic dominance from a region like Karas coming in the near future because of that green, the green hydrogen development, than what Ochivirongo will be able to offer. And Ochivirongo also has potentially more mining or mines than Karas. But Karas is now getting the central focus. Okay, besides the comparative analysis there of the two regions, what would be an ideal picture that I said just before that analysis is, why haven't we opened up the University of Ochivirongo?
Isn't this one of those places where our population size discussion comes into play?
Which it is, basically. But it would have helped Helmut, for example, the template that the South Africans have. And that's why I always keep bouncing back to the South Africans. Namibia's development trajectory, even though it is sovereign, has in some way a template, an existing template that it can follow. Meaning, how did you get something like the University of Stellenbosch that so many Namibians have gone and given money to?
Yeah.
So many Namibians. We've paid millions to South African universities. For some reason, we don't see what South Africa did for South Africa. How did they get a University of the Free State, UFS?
How do they get a university of Wits, of Witwatersrand? Wits. How do they get
a university? What now?
Witwatersrand. White water, something. I don't know what a rand is in English. But Witwatersrand. How do they get Wits? How do they get, University of Pretoria? How do they get a university of KZN? A university of Fort Hare? The famous university that trained all the Pan-African, independent struggle, academics of Africa. Fort Hare.
No, interesting enough, I only knew that about Makerere in Uganda.
Yeah. But Fort Hare played a role as well. Fort Hare had to train people.
Yeah.
You get to, University of what's that university in Port Elizabeth? It was no longer Port Elizabeth. It was now Kaberga, that weird name. Because it was only South Africans that go and decide what a clique must be without learning from us that have the clique languages, whose clique languages actually mean something. Let's leave, yeah. So, Port Elizabeth, they've got a university as well.
Yeah.
But when we, and outside of Port, you came us that city, that town. What's that town's name? Rhodes, where the University of Rhodes is based. And then Rhodes. But look at all, how much, it's the town's existence, the town's identity is literally the university. The town's identity, Stellenbosch, is literally the university.
Yeah.
Rhodes' identity, the town that Rhodes is based in, is literally the Rhodes University. Yes, it was started by one of Africa's most famous colonizers, Cecil John Rhodes. A brutal man. Yes, a man that set up the total dominance of Southern Africa's diamond industry. But you know what? We're still perpetuating that history. Because we just believed in... We must depend on diamonds for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm digressing again. When you look at that, how these training institutions have worked, these universities are all, because of their legacies, because of their age, they're all recognized by the South African Department for Higher Education. And the South African president is technically chancellor to all universities in South Africa. Yes, Helmut. It's not this weird thing where just one university and the president only shows up to one university's graduate. If it's a university with that label, recognized by the Ministry of Higher Education or whatever, because we almost don't have a higher education ministry anymore. It was now just MESAC.
Mm-hmm.
Then the president is chancellor to all universities. Now, do you see the benefit?
There's a lot of speeches during graduation season.
No, but that's just why the vice chancellors deliver them.
Yeah.
You didn't hear all these South African presidents showing up to graduation ceremonies, goedersen, because they know their job is demanding. I mean, they have to fly where and be where and swat flyers in their local parties and stuff like that. You know, a whole bunch of mutinies left, right and center, Eskom issues. Yes, Helmut, the economy is a serious issue. But here in Namibia, it seems like our presidents have time to show up at graduation ceremonies. So if you're going to be one university's chancellor, you better be a chancellor to all universities that are under a public administrative scenario. Okay. Now, I laid the template in that description, Helmut, of what exists for a country we share a border with, that our president is now currently in Pretoria, visiting homeboy Ramaphosa, you know? Yeah, she's there.
Yeah.
The guy that hid money in a sofa, you know? Had sofa or furniture investment options, you know, going for himself.
And now that you brought it up, I think he must be President Ramasofa. I've never gone to South Africa, am I?
Remember, we've got South African listeners, Albert. We've got South African listeners. Guys, I'm sorry, you know, but sometimes you guys also have to be in the jokes. Don't worry. So, yeah. So, and I every day I ask the question, if Namibia wanted a development template, all we should have just said is send a whole bunch of guys from the National Planning Commission.
Yeah.
Just go drive through South Africa, please.
Don't meet the South Africans. Just go drive through South Africa. Don't fly to South Africa. Drive to South Africa. Experience another country on the ground from the border to your destination and then back. Go drive. But for some reason, Helmut,
we flew to South Korea
for a PowerPoint presentation. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even ask.
You gotta love Namibia.
Please don't bring that up again. It could have been a Zoom call, but we flew to South Korea for a PowerPoint presentation. Man, man.
I'm pretty sure someone brought it up. Can we just do this, on a Zoom? Who's running the National Planning Commission at the time? It was Obed Gonjode.
Yeah, Gonjode.
I haven't traveled in a while. Bring me that plane.
Well, but I mean,
to Seoul.
But I mean, even, Helmut, even going to a place like South Korea now. There's a reason why South Korea, Japan, and Germany are known as economic history's three most shining examples of how to achieve industrial dominance. They all emerged from war zones.
Yeah.
They all emerged from war zones. They all had direct sovereign national plans to say, listen, there's an opportunity to participate in a broader global economic scenario, and the main idea here is make things to sell things to export things. That's it, Helmut. That is it. Make things to sell things to export things. Make things to sell things to export things. You remember your buddy with the Dirmakar assessment. That was the template. That was the basis where all those three countries began. Make things to sell things to export things.
Mak di deng to verkoop di deng, and what's to
voer di deng uit.
Voer di deng uit.
Yeah. Maar
look, as someone who finds themselves in the field of study of in the legal aspect of field of study
of Dirmakaring,
I'm really fascinated as to how we are going to strike a balance between having the right environment for the regulatory authorities to go and assess when private institutions want to run take for example in this case health training institutions. And also ensuring that Namibians have access to well vetted institutions for them to study and to spend their money and study in.
Yeah.
You know, that is somewhat the same conundrum that you see again with the public procurement. Procurement Act, because now we have to find the sweet spot in between, regulating while with enough room to get the job done, but not leaving too much room to leave a lot of loopholes for financial mismanagement.
Mm.
So you can't, over-regulation is bad because you can't get anything done, because you can get things done, but it takes forever. Creates a lot of sluggishness. Now, under regulation leaves a lot of loopholes for rots. So you have to find the middle spot. And the training institutions in terms of health training is now in caught in between, have the facility and students for us to come and assess, for us to accredit, to register, and for us to accredit and authorize you to operate.
Yeah.
And on one hand, we are telling the students that must be heard by these institutions not to apply to these institutions because they are still under accreditation or registration process. So finding a sweet spot for that will be a very tricky one.
Mm.
And I just looking forward to how they are going to untangle that very mixed up
world. I don't think it's an untanglement, Hamid, because to me, it seems like there are two ministries that actually had to do the presentations first before everyone else began.
Yeah.
It's Minister of Education and Minister of Health. MESAC and Minister of Health, their executive directors should have first have been in that room.
Yeah.
Before meeting with NQA, NTA, Goederse, because from what I could assess, and obviously you could also assess primarily from the audio, was that the Health Professions Council knows this is the standard operating procedure.
Yeah.
They know it. They admitted it on that audio.
Yeah.
Now, the accusation of the hypothesis is that they're trying to find illegality, which was also one of the traps that that MP set for the first presenters, which they technically stepped into the trap automatically.
Look, my favorite part is of this whole thing is this is not the first time we are seeing this. We saw this with the with the ombudsman Namra discussion.
Were they assumed powers that they did not have?
Exactly. Someone showed up with what they thought was a powerful point, only to be told, actually, no. Yes, you have power, but your power is not unlimited. It is limited by this and this and this piece of legislation. And here is, for me, it's the same thing that I'm seeing with the MPs here showing up with all these regulatory authorities.
Mm.
Yeah, sort of like trying to, from the look of things, trying to find fault in how these private institutions are operating. Only to learn that maybe there is a fault in the how private institutions are operating, but the bigger one so far is on their side.
Yeah. The undir mekaarness has to take place on the regulatory side.
Exactly. It starts
and
from
on the lawmaker's side.
Yeah. And
now how do you as a lawmaker, Hamoud, go and ask the bank for the law that you passed?
Yeah.
Yeah, why are you operating like this? And all I'm showing you as the bank is, oh no, I'm complying fully. Look at me. Here's all my licensing, all my compliance applications and certifications. And look, I'm up to date with even affirmative action legislation. But you were the lawmaker who passed this law.
Yeah, which you I find confusing
seen.
Now.
You should have foreseen that we are here 10 years later after that law was passed. And many of these laws are 10 years plus. 10 years plus. They're not even like 3 years plus. Let's review a process. No. It's 10 years plus. They're ancient. But before we continue, we actually have to take a short ad break and come back right after this, dear listeners. Davichi University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. So coming back, guys, heading into our last hour, obviously, as you do know, that we've revamped to where we now run from 4 to 7. And in the last chapter that we basically just after the, before the ad break, highlighted was specifically the root cause of, if I want to use the word evil, Helmut, is, or the root cause of this problem is the laws that lawmakers passed. The laws that lawmakers passed. It's not even the money that the private sector guys spent. It's the laws that the lawmakers passed. And Helmut, I just, for the fun of it now, when we started today's show at the start, I quickly just went, because I was going to go try and look for all the standing committee members, and their names, and I could only find, because it seems like the parliament website is revamped, and now you can even find a bill tracker tracking the bills. You know, for the National Assembly discussions.
Technology.
Those two guys in that interview. Technology.
Technology.
I was like, look at these guys. you guys are simple. But anyway, So, at the heart of this conversation, we wish to meet certain particular lawmaking requirements in the broader scheme of achieving the realities, the interventions of economic development and its desired outcomes. Now, the Home Run has already told you guys back in last year that trickle-down economics does not work. Trickle-down economics is Disney fairy tales.
Yep. And it's one of those things that sounds perfecto on paper.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful on paper. But if you've had something like fish rot that actually committed more chaos and more damage to the national economy of Namibia, where you've had the Fisheries Reserve Agency basically not, in during the same period, not accounting, measuring, nor declaring statistics or annual reports for 10 years, you can make up your own particular assumptions, but we're giving you the evidence that exists. And you go into Auditor General's reports that highlight specifically that ministries like Ministry of Agriculture are literally enemies of progress against achieving SDG-related climate goals, then you also realize we've got a big problem here. Do we understand our assignments?
Hang on a second. I'm taking inventory here because I'm seeing there's a regulatory conundrum that regulatory bodies that regulate the training institutions in the health discipline
have to
clarify to these private institutions as to what is required of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they already gave them that clarity.
On this one, it's a good thing lawmakers showed up there, I swear, because this, for me, I'm looking at it as a legislative issue, because these regulatory bodies are just operating on the laws that was, that they were founded on. And they didn't make these laws, they're just following them.
Yep.
Yeah. So that means, back to the drawing board. And we are talking about mostly interpretation here. What does this mean? Because we don't want to interpret it. We want you to explain to us what this means so we can explain it to the training institutions so they can do the right, so we can give these training institutions the right instructions. Because, so that in that way, if they don't follow it, we know that, it's just a negligence maybe on their part. But, as of now, it's looking more like an ambiguity thing.
And, who showed the best tagline after the national budget unveiling? Remember Robin Sherborne's tagline of saying making expensive decisions?
Expensive promises.
Yeah, expensive promises. We don't know if we're making expensive promises or not. But that obviously was based on the budget announcement by the minister. But you can technically also see that this looks like potentially an expensive promise scenario because there is a law that says one thing and there's an activity taking place which doesn't seem to follow it. Yeah, Helmut, I wanted to tell you my story, man. Can I tell my story?
Yeah, start with Once Upon a Time. But first, welcome, David.
Hey, David. How you doing, David? Welcome. We actually wouldn't have missed you today, bro. Don't worry.
You don't miss me.
we wouldn't have missed you. But it's good that you're here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
As always. No, I'm following through the conversation. I think we spoke about it at one point regarding the health training institutions.
Yeah. Because I supplied you most with the stuff. And then you asked me, Dwight, what's going on here? And I was like, okay.
And the other thing maybe that we should add, apart from the regulations. Apart from looking at all those requirements. And I like the topic that you guys put out there, especially looking at the health sector, building an effective health sector. Apart from regulations and following up on what has already been established, what about the quality of health service that is being given?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to go beyond that, also to speak about what is the contribution of... You can just ask a general question to say, what is a contribution of Namibia health education or Namibia education to strengthening of health? how are we involved? Because regulation is one thing, but I wanted the questions to be more on qualities. Mm-hmm. I know it's a lawmaking committee that is looking at regulations, but at the end of the day, mm-hmm. having good regulations without outcomes, it's not going to help anything.
Actually,
yeah,
it's the APRM discussion. Thank you, David. Thank you, David.
Now you need me.
You hit it on the head. Thank you. It's the APRM discussion.
You know. Thank you for bringing that up, because what that also leads to is. How are we, first of all, we will have to, to look at the, health service provision. Yeah. That's one.
Yeah.
And do an analysis and look at the quality of the service being provided. Yeah. And then we can look at, whether it is attributed to the manpower or it's attributed to infrastructure. Now, and I'm pretty sure the infrastructure will pop up, but let's just look at it from a manpower standpoint. When we're looking at it from manpower, are we looking at this, take for example, if we're looking at some degree of incompetence, is it coming from is it coming from, overworking or it's coming from, the lack of, training? And does that boil down to the type of training institution that provided this certain this certain medical professional? But the reason why that's important is for us to measure how the quality of this of a health practitioner being put up in the in the job market.
Yeah.
We will first have to look at the standard of the institutions. Yeah. So that quality will obviously, the quality of the trainee or the graduate will trace back to which institution trained them.
Yeah.
And when we say, quality skills for the student.
Yeah.
What criteria are we using in terms of, looking at that quality from an institution standpoint? No. Are we looking at how long they have been in existence, or how many graduates they are producing per year, or, maybe the type of English they speak, and all those things? But, it will be a very interesting, analysis to, of the amount of information that we need to put together to come to the conclusion as what constitutes quality is quality graduate or quality training institution.
Yeah, and also I think there's something that Dwight mentioned that day which also touched me, especially regarding not in a bad way, especially regarding the question of you guys, you have spoken about it also, the question of are you registered.
Yeah.
The question of coordination among institutions, I was a bit disappointed by some parliamentarians also, because they were asking an obvious question. For you to have International University of Management to be standing there, first, you start operating only registered with few regulatory bodies until you come to the point where you are operating for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
Until you come to the point where some of your qualifications are accredited, some of them, they are still in the process of being reviewed.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that you should stop teaching students.
Yeah.
But what is very interesting is also that I cannot remember correctly the name of one of the directors of those institutions who mentioned that very clearly, to say for us to operate, for us to reach where we want to get into.
Yeah.
We need to be existent.
Yeah.
And in this process, we are teaching.
And you need to operate.
You need to operate because that is a requirement.
Yeah.
And even the way that invitation was phrased, it was discriminatory. Not really to play victims, but you cannot say, was it mushrooming health training institutions?
Proliferation. Yeah, mushrooming. That was the leading question.
You can't do that.
You can't say mushrooming as if it sounds like weeds.
No, you're popping up out of the ground. You already made your conclusion.
Yeah.
If you are coming and assess my institution and your poster saying mushrooming, when I come there, I'm on a defensive mode because you already made your conclusion.
That the fault is on my part.
Because I don't even know who wrote that thing.
It's
parliamentary committee going to something, but it's written mushrooming.
No, look,
health training institutions.
Hey, look on the bright side here.
If
I was running a health training institution,
yeah.
I would look at that. I would look at that as a positive thing because that language seems to entail, if we, generally interpreted that. yeah, it's my fault. But after the engagement, yeah, the very simple conclusion to draw is that, yeah, this whole time it is a I'm being forced to comply, I'm being asked to follow legislations that are giving me a lot of mixed messages.
Yeah.
Don't have students unless, until you are accredited, and also have students for us to assess you for, in order to accredit you.
The weirdest sort of like philosophical discussion here is, the conclusion that the MPs come that approach the discussion, they're not approaching it from let's be objective. They're approaching it from I have an idea that you're not following some sort of a law.
Yeah.
Now, the line of questioning and the discussion itself was one about the business owner has to prove now.
Yeah.
There is no court of law. They have to prove that they are bona fide.
But you know, one thing I like about public engagement is that you'll be able to see who is not doing the right thing.
You get because
it's not something that is being pushed. If I ask you a question in public and you answer it,
yeah,
then I'll get who understand, who does not understand. Yeah. Then I also get where we are operating from.
That is what we said about Oshikati Aigoto.
Yeah.
The MPs literally told the executive directors and the government officials, so why don't you guys just to fix the High Court door in Oshikati? Because the High Court door fell off.
Yeah.
So why don't you just fix the High Court door with emergency procurement? But a door's replacement doesn't classify as emergency procurement. So the MPs were suggesting something that technically does not comply with the Procurement Act.
A law they made.
It shows you already there the thinking of the MP to suggest something that probably would bring a government official in front of a corruption tribunal.
They're the one that would show up.
They are the ones making the accusation. So you even see the thinking that the MP don't understand the legal ramifications of their suggestions things that they're investigating.
You even made it simple. The question was, are there no other ways?
It was vague. Like abracadabra.
Hang on a second.
Are there no other ways?
Didn't you write these things? So now you're asking me if there are other ways.
You know, other ways through the window already, you can see that. But it's a very good observation, because at the end of the day, you always see who is not prepared. But the other thing that we also need to look at is that, what is the reason of making laws? You are making laws to improve the standard of human beings. Now, yes, you are asking me a lot of questions. Are you registered? For how long have you been operational and all these things, which is good.
Yeah.
But have you looked at what we were discussing about to say, what is the quality of our health education? How come, and it's quite funny, how come nurses, they fail, practicing license? There was even a case of external medical.
It was the guys that came from Russia and Russia, Ukraine, and I don't know if it was included the Chinese.
I think it was Russia, Ukraine, and Cuba.
No, it wasn't Cuba. No, the Cubans, the guys that are trained by Cuba.
The Cubans have an age for you.
Yeah, because they are pretty good, but. It was at that stage, it was 2017, 2018.
You know why?
And then they marched. Do you remember they marched? Because they were told to write an extra assessment test exam. And they were unhappy. They were told to write an extra.
What do you mean? I've spent five, six years doing it.
Yeah, but you are not able to pass your certification. Because the good thing about medical doctors and lawyers and engineers also, you have practicing license.
Yeah,
but the thing I want to speak about is let us look at quality. Let us look at what has been done, because if we want to improve our health sector, we need to look at the quality. What is our contribution? Do we really need to cry when our medical stores are empty? Or do we need to find a way to say, what can we do as Namibians to contribute to this, drugs production or medical drugs production?
Those are the science. That those are the other scientists. Mm-hmm. The guys that have to go and treat us. You know, when you and I and Helmut, when we are old, these are the nurses and the extra. You know, sort of like.
No, I see. But if health training institution come up with a new innovation, unlike replacing what has been there, it does become part of business too.
Definitely.
Then it become what they say in that poster. Which was wrong, actually, to say it that way. You understand? Which was wrong, actually, to say it that way.
Yeah.
But if now you are not bringing anything new, and you already have the market which is full of nurses, it has never been like that. Then are you not diluting the quality of health sector too? But I'm still not like supporting the statement that has been given. That has been given.
Look, the two of you there, with your terminologies there.
Yeah. But let us look at that. Look at the quality of things. The same thing that if you have a lot of new training centers, can we not debate on numbers? Can we not debate on mushrooming things? Let us debate on the quality.
No, that's the thing specifically, also, ne? That, a little bit earlier in the discussion that it technically also exposes this centralization dominance that Windhoek has. Because David, imagine that you've got a business, you go, let's say, into another region, you go open up a business because you realize Windhoek has got stifling requirements and compliance requirements and things and unnecessary regulations that literally only big businesses, FDI, can that they can comply with. But when you go into just the next region, you realize land costs $5,000 million, and then it's a 2,000 square meter property. To build costs you 30,000. A proper decent facility with walls, a roof, ceilings, and everything. The only thing that would probably cost you like extensive investment would be the salaries for your staff and the equipment for the staff to work with. Now, if you see such low entry barriers into operating a business in another part of the country, why is Windhoek so problematic? Now, this is where I highlighted Namibia's easiest pathway to try and decentralize higher education should be following South Africa. Oshakati should have its own university. Rundu should have its own university. I don't like this template of these.
There are no branches.
That's the thing. Because a branch doesn't actually. If you look at the South African template,
it doesn't have the je ne sais quoi.
Okay.
And by the way, that literally translates to it doesn't have the I don't know.
The I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't. Okay. To supplement, to actually replace the je ne sais quoi with the essence of what that region needs, because in the broader scheme of things, David, what the standing committee was trying to say was, there is no business for you if you are trained in medicine or not, if you're a medical scientist or not, if you're a chemist or not. You have no business in opening up a private training facility in Namibia. That was their bare bones message without them saying it. That was their message, the mushrooming. And then, if you look at the scenario, but I need to bring a service to a talented, academically inclined person who lives in Rundu. I, as a trained Namibian, must bring the same to a same Namibian in Keetmans. But we're not doing that. We're opening up satellite campuses from established institutions instead of just saying, go open up a new university.
I think what the committee was scared of looking at is to come to the reality on the ground to say, how many nurse graduates do you have in the country? I think that they were supposed to start from there, apart from looking at the aspect of finding out who did not meet the requirements. But the very important aspect of the economy, particularly the health sector, is to have a strong, regulations, uncontradictory regulations, because if you start making a health sector as the business like that, what we do with order with me, then you compromise the quality of human capital in that country too. You cannot be controlled anymore. Mm. But I think they were not really looking at where they're supposed to look at. You were supposed to look at, okay, do we have quality people who are already graduates?
Yeah.
Then you start from there. If these people do not have quality education, mm-hmm. which they are needed, what can be done?
Yeah.
Because instead of saying, did you register? No, I'm not registered. I'm not accredited yet. I'm still operating. After 5 years, I have 500 graduates already in the field. Mm. What are we doing about the quality? Because if we start making really messes, you know, just medical fraternity, yeah. was supposed to be service. It's not part of, it's not business, mm-hmm. like what is happening now. But if you make it business, it will be very problematic, especially if I just want to do it to survive. Mm. I just want to do it to survive. But I think MPs, and these are new ones, the lawmakers should also be blamed.
There's a handful of them that have been there for a long time.
Yeah, they should also be blamed for not putting the health sector in order. Because with new development, you need to always be very fast, especially with regulations.
Yeah.
AI doctors are coming now. How are you going to regulate those things?
And AI nurses.
AI nurses are coming. Yeah. And yeah, they are
AI going to psychologists to, already.
They are going to disrupt this whole system.
And the AI will tell you, yes, you are crazy.
Mm.
You will ask, am I crazy? And they go, yeah, well, there's a probability you probably lost all your chickens.
But I think the intention was good, but not really 100% focused. And and also the statement itself, maybe it's also a matter of PR, the statement itself.
It is the statement.
You cannot do that.
Yeah. I wanted to tell my story, guys.
Quickly. You can't invite me to trial and and you are judging. You already have a judgment.
You can't defend yourself.
But this whole thing had a boomerang effect.
And the boomerang effect is happening.
Yeah.
It is happening. Mm. Now, there is a similar story to this that I personally have witnessed. Not with a qualification of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, before NAS became Polytechnic, they still have that department, the Nature Conservation Department at that stage. There was a friend of mine who studied in that department. Yeah. At that stage, we still had the national diploma levels. The 3-year course was your national diploma. And she and a cluster, her cohort, her cluster of classmates, they, in some cases, some of them needed this qualification, for example, to operate like in Ministry of Environment recognized facilities, agencies, and even in the ministry itself with its directorates for nature conservation and whatever and so on and so forth. Now, I'm now describing a picture just between 2010 and 2015. Because at 2015, Polytechnic became NAST. So this friend of mine, she had to go to South Africa to pursue.
But before we continue, we're actually going to take a short break and come back right after that.
Before the friend came back from South Africa, on the other side of the break.
Get a you save today, where every penny counts. 1 liter Clover Long Life Milk, just 22.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of everyday yogurt, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. A 500 gram brick of Rama 70% fat spread, just 26.99 Namibian dollars. Discounted prices on Rhodes, Ten Food, and You Save brand jams too. You Save, your low budget grocery store, where good food costs less.
Welcome back. We are 30 minutes to the hour of 7. You are listening to Home Run with Helmut, with HDD. And Dwight's story, please continue.
Yeah, so where I left off. So this friend of mine, now, remember, she's not the only person that I knew that studied this qualification, this nature, whatever it was at that stage, because I forgot, but I know it came from this department. At that stage, Polytechnic was accredited.
Yeah.
But the qualification wasn't accredited. And so many people had been graduated under this qualification. Now, she had to go to South Africa technically to go study with one of South Africa's, there in the Western Cape, one of, I don't know if it's the University of Western Cape or another university like UCT,
Mm-hmm. But she had to go to South Africa technically to basically get it, that accreditation satisfaction, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, scenarios like this exist the whole Namibia through. Scenarios like this exist the whole Namibia through. Now, I didn't get to have the opportunity to listen to the main universities during the course of that those presentations, because you could gauge from the first 4 or 5 presentations of the day of where this discussion is going, because everybody's going to face the same questions. Everybody's sitting in the same location. Everybody's observing everybody else's presentations. It's not like you have been called in, David, please come and present. Mm-hmm. David is done. Or you can leave. Dwight, come and present. Now you're done. Okay, Helmut, come and present. No, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
It was literally everyone is now observing everybody else's presentations. So, a scenario like this has been exists in the Namibian higher education realm since whenever. You can be an established, recognized tertiary institution in Namibia, and you can introduce a new course, and then the course is not accredited by NQA. But remember, NQA's accreditation template is based upon the South African Qualifications Authority's template. NQA is based on SAQA.
Mm-hmm.
NQA doesn't fall out of a UAU thing. NQA mm-hmm. falls from SAQA. NQA and SAQA literally are aligned with each other, so that if you take a university qualification from Namibia, you can go across the border and say, I'm from this university, from this institute in Namibia. It's literally, it allows Namibians to be able to work there and work here with these accreditations. But here's the thing. Like David said, we need to know the numbers.
Mm.
How many courses, whether you are government or private, how many courses have this particular problem? Where, like the second presenter said, the person has to travel out of Windhoek to come and accredit me in Oshakati. Which your question was, why didn't that SOE have an office in the north already? Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's most petrol and it's most time-wasting, most man. Now that person has to drive all the way from Windhoek to go and accredit there, get tired, doesn't care anymore, does half a job, half a proper job, drives back, does half a proper accreditation exercise, and then everything has to start again because the person was too tired with driving.
No, it's very difficult. It's not an easy thing, especially looking at regulations and also regulators.
Yeah.
When I was speaking to the chief inspector today, the chief inspector within the Minister of Health, regarding the bill of the nuclear bill, you start understanding that not only that we have contradictory institutions, but we have another proposition of having another institution within the new bill of, nuclear bill. Speak about, nuclear institute. You speak about regulator.
So we have to spend more money again.
And create employment again.
Yes.
To look at those regulations.
Helmut, didn't I say this already? You see the need in a developing economy.
Yeah.
They need to employ more people.
Yeah, but the other thing, what I want to look into is the quality of things. Because if all the nurses are employed at Central Hospital, then they are saying anybody can go there. If the minister is not careful, the nurse that's going to attend him or her is somebody who has trained from an institution that yet to be recognized maybe the next year. And that, I think those are some of the things that maybe they are scared of.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that we need to put on the scale is the quality to say, who is teaching these people?
Yeah.
What are they being taught?
Yeah.
Apart from to say people are mushrooming. And also the question of demand and supply in Namibia. Why are we not talking about demand and supply? You know, it's quite contradictory, ne? When we know where our problem is. We know already that...
and we know that there's Namibians trying to meet the problem.
Mm.
But then you say, are you accredited?
Why are you not going to the question of demand and supply to say, okay, you are coming into the system, there are already others, why can't we start with these numbers? Why can't we speak to universities to say, we are producing for who?
Yeah.
If nurses are now attending interview, they never attend an interview. And we don't want to speak about this because this is all you involve politics and business. Because if I am a chancellor of a university.
Yeah.
Then my statistics are already telling me to say 80% of our graduates are still in the street. I have to sit down and say, guys, why are you not cutting this? This is not what the market wants.
But that's also education's issue, you know that?
Yeah. No, education they've been fighting for a very long time. That's that battle never end. Even the between the Ministry of Higher Education and Basic Education,
yeah.
You know the battle of AS level.
Yeah.
You understand?
The battle of the oversupply of primary teachers versus secondary teachers. It seems like Namibians don't want to deal with the teenagers of other Namibians.
I just had hard stuffs. Just go straight to hard stuffs. Yeah, because if you have to teach, high school, you have to not only to be strong mentally, but you need to be strong in terms of content.
Obviously, Almut is the superman here between us.
But do you know that I taught at a private academy for 6 months, and I said no.
Guys, my next future sector of employment is still in the secondary education realm.
No, it was my first job, but to look into that matter, if you are not looking at the numbers, we are looking at the regulations. We are still going to have a problem, and we have been saying this to say the problem of unattended young people will not bring us dangerous problem in the next 5 years.
Yeah,
but that thing will be comparing to, you know, piling up to problems already. Because if you continue oversupplying, because every lady, every guy want to wear a white uniform to go and become a nurse. But you have already 1,000 of them from all the institution, whether you call them mushrooming or not, they are already here. What is stopping that committee, apart from looking at the regulations, to say, let us look at the number, let us look at the needs? If you speak about statistics, if you speak about monitoring and evaluation, the problem of unemployment, you are just dealing with it. To say if 100 of institutions, they are regulated, they comply, let's the training continue. Then it will be an absolute waste of time, particularly to those who are paying privately. Even absolutely the waste of time of government money. And maybe the other aspect apart from nursing is also education. Mm. To say, are we just applying or we are also looking at quality? Can we conduct any test to look at the quality of people that we are producing?
No, when it comes to education, quality is one aspect that we have to look at.
Yeah.
But the most important, I think, we have to look at before we get to quality is the alignment with the job market. Yeah. Because this is a serious problem, especially on the African continent.
Yeah.
There's a serious misalignment between the education, the education being offered and the ipso facto the graduates that are being produced by high institutions and the job market that they have to get into. Yeah, because this misalignment is why we are seeing this, the rise in unemployment. We are offering excellent courses at the universities, but if you compare, if you look at the high institutions and the courses are being offered, and what is the equivalent in terms of alignment, after we produce this nuclear physicist graduates, where in our job market do they fit in? You realize that there is a serious misalignment.
And the pace also.
The
pace of developing these institutions is the same thing, and people don't want to speak about this. There was a debate, there was an interesting debate at IPPR. Mr. Rink, Frederico, presented the report regarding the skills of Namibians when it comes to green hydrogen and also the employability.
The last monitor.
Yeah. No. But before that one, the other one, it almost caused a bit of a commotion because the argument was you are starting new industry. Yes, we understand. It's a very good debate.
Yeah.
However, some of the people that you gave scholarships, they are coming to us to say they are not working. Then the debate was, no, let us produce more so that when the industry are standing, we are not going to suffer anymore, which quite look like a good argument.
Yeah.
But what is the difference between that argument and the argument of 1990 to say, first, let's do education, let's provide quality education to Namibian people so that we can industrialize. But the problem that we came up with there is that we even failed to understand how many institutions we have in Namibia, how many are producing what. Then now we are at this problem.
Mm-hmm.
People are still applying to say whether you have 20,000 education graduates in Namibia. Nobody cares about statistics. People are still establishing institutions, which is within their rights.
Yeah.
But the question is that what are those graduates going to do new?
Yeah.
What are they going to do new?
There's one South African TikToker I followed that made a very compelling argument from my point of view that a lot of African countries, when we got our independence, in terms of the aligning our education system with the available job market, that misalignment from his point of view, or the argument that he makes is that that's coming from from the way we set up these two. We're supposed to set them up in a way that they complement each other. Now, the layout that he points out using, I believe, Vietnam and some Asian countries as an example is that, it would have been a brilliant idea. The argument he makes was that it would have been a brilliant idea to set up, the soft industries.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, those soft industries, would have required specific observable needed skills. And now those skills would have led to the setting up of TVET to produce those particular skills that are needed by those institutions. Now, to improve on the technology that's already set up by, that's already needed in these institutions, that would have led into the investment of not just expanding the TVETs, but also investing into the research investment on how to increase the base and technical knowledge of these institutions, from TVET to academic institutions with a full blown research and development departments.
Mm.
That would have created a loop between the job market, aka, the industries that are running, then the skills that are needed are communicated to the TVET and the high institutions, and then those high institutions offer courses that are based on those needed skills. Now, those two, that loop would have reduced the misalignment between these two. Which I find that, it's a very good argument to make.
Yeah.
Except when a lot of countries, became, a lot of independence, we reasonably so decided to prioritize, education, let's produce doctors and masters. Now we are producing those people, except when we look at the job market available, we don't see anywhere to feed them. And what happens is they hop on a plane to Europe. Now, when we are interviewing them for what's taking place in Africa, they are being interviewed on an Eagle FM platform while sitting in Paris.
You are right.
Or in Frankfurt.
Or
in Berlin.
Yeah. I'm an expert in this from an African point of view. I have a Namibian ID, but I'm in Berlin.
How can you become an expert in that?
Please explain, before the ad break or after the ad break. David, explain that thing after the ad break.
Okay, no problem.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only 25 Namibian dollars. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just 18.99 Namibian dollars. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just 49.99 Namibian dollars. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for 28.99 Namibian dollars. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only 12.99 Namibian dollars. You Save. Where else?
So David's example takes over before we wrap things up because we only have 15 minutes left to the hour of 7 where we say goodbye for the day.
Yeah, let's continue with Home Run. Just to look at what is popping up, maybe it's also connected to what we are discussing, where, medical operators, they wrongly amputated a child.
Mm-hmm.
That is Sino Shivarongo. But the question is that, what can be done moving forward? Is that saying something about the quality? Is it saying something about the experience? Is it saying something about the institution that this person was trained? What can we do about it? Because those are things that are happening to say, yes, maybe this person who cut off the arm of this kid, maybe was trained by an institution that was recognized, recognized and accredited in terms of regulations, but not to look at the quality,
skills.
Not to look at the quality and skills. Because at the end of the day, you know, the Ministry of Health have been sued for millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Due to those, some of these medical, you know, errors.
Yeah.
But the question is, when are we going to go to the quality? Because if you are creating a lot of fearless, unqualified doctors, people end up even not going. You made a very good example. I'm not going to say it on air. People even be scared of going for operations because this is what's happening. But maybe something that need to be looked at, especially looking at the strength of the sector, and also what does it do to human beings? Because people forget to say, whatever we do, whatever we speak about, whatever people debate in parliament, it roots directly into how is this impacting the life of a Namibian? Because you are MP to make sure that you are working for the state, for the greater good of all the Namibians. But if you cannot differentiate between business and politics, we end up cutting off people's arms, then we all end up at the social grind, which is not a needed thing, especially when we are speaking now. And I think debate must go beyond the regulations. It must look at quality. It must look at impact. Most of the people that you see in Namibia with qualifications, they went to institutions, accredited, recognized by all the bodies. Some are admitted lawyers with bar exam and all these things. But the question remains to say, is the production answering to the demand, or the production is only on status, or the production is just there for the sake of being there? If we are not doing it now, if we are not doing it this year, I know now the Ministry of Education will not contradict with each other because now one ministry. There was a fight. It was an open fight that showed our weaknesses, Namibians, between UNAM is it's my university, but I have to speak about it, between UNAM and high schools, basic education. The vice chancellor is very bold and say, no, we'll admit you, but not at UNAM with grade 11 certificates.
Oh, when they brought out the brain courses.
Yeah, the question is that now, are you guys not in the same boat? Are you guys not in the same roof?
Yeah.
Were you guys not supposed to be consultant? You come up with something which is even approved at the national level. Yeah. Then,
so that you are, you know, both the high school and the tertiary institutions are
understand that we are changing. They are changing the curriculum. Exactly. People must go to university from grade 11. Then say, no, that is not how we are standing. We are not going to accept that. But I think it's a matter of coordination too. Moving forward, yeah.
You know, this becomes a very interesting conversation to have for me, and I'm glad we are having this not just here on Home Run, but the regulatory authorities and the regulatory authorities, law and lawmakers, and private institution players that met recently and have this discussion that where we based today's Home Run on. I'm glad they had this conversation that led to Home Run basically taking place today. And that's because when we are talking about things like Africa Continental Free Trade Area, we're talking about, we're talking about interacting with each other as as a continent beyond just trading products.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question then that tries is, I think, from a lawmaker and a private institution, a training institution standpoint, and also a regulatory authority standpoint, is when Africa Continental Free Trade Area kicks into full swing, are the institutions in Namibia going to stand up to to other institutions in Botswana, Zambia, Ghana, Nigeria, and the regulators, are they going to become a laughingstock on a continental level for having a contradictory regulations? And the now for the graduates, are they going to have the quality of of education imparted on them that will enable them to participate not just in Namibia's health sector in terms of health institution graduates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you graduate at this particular institution in a well-regulated environment in Namibia, you'll be able to work in Egypt, Tunisia, Nigeria, Ghana, Central African Republic, or Libya. Now, all this, when you look at it on a much larger scale, it looks, it goes beyond just us having this conversation in Namibia, because we want to get to the point where lawmakers know that they have the regulation in place that have led to the quality institutions that are producing quality graduates that can take their qualifications everywhere in, everywhere. In the world, not just in Africa, and they will still be looked at and said, you know what, we know this is quality work. Mm. You can participate in our economy.
You can be globally competitive.
Yeah.
No, it's a very good thing that you brought it up to say, when we are producing, are you also producing human capital for Africa?
Yeah.
How many nurses do you have in Namibia, from Namibia, that are working in Botswana? How many of them can say, I'm not working here, but there is a medical practice in Lagos, the way I'm going to work.
Imagine this happening in Nigeria now. The Nigerian government is like, hey, which country are you from?
Where were you trained?
Where were you trained?
Yeah. No, it's a very good thing because, you know, before the guests come,
yeah,
you who are at home, you must be prepared for the guest.
Yeah.
You must know your game. You must, even behavior-wise, you must know how to accommodate the guest.
Yeah.
But now, before the storm, because Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement, I see it also as a disruption, where you're still going to have losers and winners. Uh-huh. It's not paradise.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
you can imagine the competition is
great. No, it's not paradise, because you can say free market, but there is nothing really free.
No.
The competition is still going to be there, but yeah, it's a very good thing that I never even thought about that when you speak about the readiness of Namibia.
Yeah.
Because when you speak about Africa, we need a free trade area. We are not only going to speak about uranium, oil and gas and other commodities. We are going to speak about human capital, yeah, free movement of people and many other things. But, let's see how things are going to turn out. And also, if those who are charged with the responsibility of, regulation and also checking of quality,
yeah,
they are very serious, then we are going to get there. But from where I'm standing, we are moving very, very slowly, especially dealing with the numbers that we need to deal with. Because instead of us going to, what we are supposed to do, I don't know, maybe it's done.
Mm-hmm.
When we go to China to discuss with a great partner of Namibia, we must already tell them to say, yes, we need industry, but we have 250,000 VTC graduates, just for example, in Namibia, train in this area already. If you are coming with a project, maybe you just advance their skills. That would be a better thing. You must already know where your problem is. When you go to EU for a meeting, you already know to say, in Namibia, I have people that I train with, maybe with this qualification, but they don't have a job.
Yeah.
When you are bringing your project, not only to bring the Robito Corridor story,
mm-hmm,
when you are bringing your projects, you must be able to make sure that,
David is getting some of our
taglines. Yeah, you must be able to make sure that you accommodate these people.
Yeah, because who eats a road?
Take things out.
Because not all of us will work on the same project and get the salaries at that, which is a short-term project as well.
Now, look, the ridiculous part of the whole Lobito Corridor is you have a bunch of guys that are meeting every year for all you can eat and a bunch of smiley pictures like those kids in a Jet magazine at the end of the show. But, we're talking about, value addition, processing everything on the continent, and then you build a road that is transporting what you are talking about processing out of the continent.
No, the road must not transport the whole elephant.
No.
it must transport maybe part of it, already cooked, or maybe half cooked. Yeah.
It's our fault sometimes as ordinary citizens for not participating in public engagements, like a uranium bill. And one thing that
I'm going to that thing tomorrow, no? It's the nuclear bill, not uranium.
Yeah, nuclear bill.
Yeah.
It's like a Vango thing you won't understand. But look, the thing.
You and Anna Glenda.
The thing is, I think when politicians, especially during election times, when politicians will start using languages like, I will create employment, we may want to start asking them where. Because Lubito Corridor Group, Lubito Corridor is creating employment in Europe. Technically, they are creating employment, just not here. So when they say, I will create employment, ask them where.
To which citizens? No, it's a very good thing that you brought that up, because maybe we also misunderstand. Maybe a person created. We just did not ask where.
We didn't ask where.
Yeah.
I mean, just before we end, there is a major lesson, and I hope all participants at every level of the Namibian economy realize this lesson. This lesson is potentially about a misunderstanding on one side of there's a need, and a misunderstanding on the other side of what must I do to be recognized as a legit business. Because we have to understand, we really have to accept a certain scenario and a situation that education is still a business venture.
Yeah.
There is no law that says none of us sitting here cannot open up a private education institution. And basically charge to educate a Namibian teenager out there. The discussion is always one based upon which David highlighted. Okay, what impact are you actually contributing?
Mm.
If the balance is that you are just that you just have 20 tutors and lecturers, and your student population is like 500, then the potential is literally you are only educating 20 people, but you are receiving financing from 500 stakeholders who are technically customers and consumers, and the service and the product that you are selling is basically some sort of a economic future.
Yeah, I think we need to start calculating, because if we are not calculating how much we are losing, then we are not going to get out of these problems. If you are not calculating to say opportunity for training 200 people, but the job market has one job, that is a wasting of money. And we are not going to recover that money anymore. Yeah. And it's money that is made without evidence-based statistics. There is nobody who can stand up and say, I'm going to start this university, or I'm going to start this health training center because I see the need here. I see the empty hospitals. There's nobody who can say that in Namibia today as we are speaking. And there's nobody who can stand up. And it's not an attack to institution, but it's just a reality of numbers. There's nobody who can, I cannot praise you. I can praise you for training, but I cannot praise you for solving a problem. You are now educating maybe high, secondary education students. But if you are saying no, upper primary or lower primary, I am here in Namibia, I have this million of money, I'll look at you and say, yes, it's good for business. But currently as we are speaking, what we need is absorbing those people first. Before you end another 1,000 in September, I'm always telling people to say, in a year we must calculate the 2 semesters. There's always graduation in April. There's always graduation
In October.
And these are not 100 people. These are 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And the question is, where are these people going?
In many cases, they already have jobs.
Yeah. So sign out on the other side of the break.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
And gentlemen, this. Oh. Now, here's where we park the bus and pass the torch over to Team Ondangwa from me. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. You all have a good one.
And on that note, guys,
enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
See you tomorrow.